This is the Millennium Radio Network. And you're on the Inside Track on World News for Thursday, the 19th of February, 2004, sponsored by neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. Coming up later in this bulletin, one distraught father reacts to news that the CDC lied about the link between vaccines and his son's autism.
I have to live with the memory of my child's cries, and knowing that each vaccination that we gave him, that I held him down for, was injuring him.
But first, either John Kerry or John Edwards would trounce President Bush in an election, says a Gallup poll just released. Kerry, the Democratic frontrunner, would beat Bush by 55-43%. Edwards would win by 54-44. The collapse in Bush support has been dramatic and fast. In early February, Bush was level with both Kerry and Edwards. The poll results throw Karl Rove's re-election strategy into disarray. He hadn't planned to defrost Obama until later this year, but the slide in Bush support must be halted, as it was late last year when Saddam Hussein saved the Bush dinosaur from electoral extinction. So, in a completely unrelated development, General Richard Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said today that the US is intensifying efforts to capture Osama bin Laden, who's reputed to be hiding out on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. The top US general said US intelligence agencies have spent an enormous amount of time on the effort. I believe him. After all, look at the spade work it took to dig that spider hole for the Saddam double. Lieutenant General David Barno, commander of US forces in Afghanistan, is already expecting to capture Osama soon. Just pull the plug on that freezer and give him a couple of weeks to thaw. He'll look as good as he did the day he died in the Saudi hospital back before 9/11. In another completely unrelated development to Bush's poll problems, the Election Assistance Commission is to speed up allocation of $2.3 billion in federal funds to buy new electronic voting systems. DeForest Sorries, the commission's chairman, said the funds will be dispersed about mid-May. The British government, meanwhile, is to give permission for the first commercial cultivation of a genetically modified crop, despite 80% of Britons being opposed to GM crops and just 2% prepared to eat them. Former colleague of Tony Blair, ex-Environment Minister Michael Meacher, accused Blair of caving into pressure from the US government and the multinational biotech companies. Now, a special report in association with Cathy McMahon of neemwell.com. The truth is out. Mercury in vaccines causes developmental problems in children. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control has known since the year 2000. They lied and used staged studies to hide the truth, and we have the proof from internal CDC discussions. Today, the official CDC line is still that vaccines are safe on their website and in their publications. The CDC says exactly what most vaccine manufacturers say.
That there is no scientific data supporting any link between developmental delay in autism and eye vaccines at this point.
At this point, that's a lie constructed in secret by the CDC and the vaccine makers. In February 2000, a CDC study found significant links between mercury in vaccines and autism in children. The CDC, the FDA and manufacturers met in June 2000 to figure out what to do. NBC affiliate First Coast News used the Freedom of Information Act to get hold of a transcript of that secret meeting. It details the reactions of those at the meeting to seeing clear proof of the damage caused by vaccines. It included comments like, "We've got a serious problem." Another comment, "It worries me. I don't want my grandson to get thimerosal-containing vaccine until we know better what's going on." Finally, the meeting concluded with the words, "We have asked you to keep this information confidential." And that's what happened. The CDC buried the study and said nothing for 3 years. Then, late last year, they selectively extracted information from the February study 2000 and published a new study contradicting the earlier results and clearing mercury vaccines of any link to neurological problems in children. 5-year-old Ryan Anderson of Jacksonville Beach is now recovering from autism-type developmental problems, which began right after he received the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, says Ryan's father, Bruce Anderson. Had the CDC spoken in 2000, Ryan would have not been made ill. It's a realization that eats away at his father, Bruce.
I have to live with the memory of my child's cries, and knowing that each vaccination that we gave him, that I held him down for, was injuring him.
Ryan's improving now because his doctor knows what the CDC won't admit. Dr. Jeff Bradstreet of Melbourne has documented how some children are unable to cope with the harmful effects of mercury.
There are children who don't detox heavy metals well because of a defect genetically. The more mercury that we expose them to, the more problems they're going to have.
And that's the inside track on mercury vaccines. Some children cannot handle them, and I'm sure there's going to be legal repercussions to that information coming out. Thanks to Kathy of Neamwell.com for that. If you'd like a copy of a special report on that, including extracts to both audio clips and video, just email Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, at Neamwell.com with subscribe in the subject line, and she'll send those out to you. Now, it's not Planet X, but it's the largest non-planetary body in our solar system. A new planetoid has been discovered in an orbit beyond Neptune. The chunk of ice and rock is about 1,000 miles in diameter, almost as big as the planet Pluto, taking 300 years to go around the Sun. It's the second body discovered in the area. Back in 2002, a smaller planetoid called Quaoar was discovered. And Mel Gibson's father just won't stay shut up. He's back on air, repeating his claim that the Holocaust was exaggerated. Hudson Gibson was interviewed on Speak Your Peace, NYWSNR Radio, and the mouthy old cuss did just that. He spoke his piece, arguing that the Holocaust was maybe not all fiction, but most of it is. The 85-year-old was only warming up. He went on to tell host Steve Fernstein that Jews were out to create one world religion and one world government, which involves Jewish bankers, the U.S. Federal Reserve, and the Vatican, among others. You're getting close there, guy. Keep it up. Drudge Report should be named Sludge Report after those exclusive stories about John Kerry's intern didn't pan out. But I wonder, will Sludge be as quick to pick up this story about conservative moralizer William Bennett, who comes down hard on those who don't measure up to his high standards? But is there a leather-bound dominatrix bodybuilder in Las Vegas who comes down rather hard on William Bennett? What story is that, you ask? None. There's no such story yet. And finally this evening, we're in a position to exclusively reveal, as a result of those falling poll numbers for President Bush, that Karl Rove has now selected a new theme song for Bush 2004. I think I better do it right now, before I fall any deeper. I think I better do it right now, being weaker and weaker. Yeah, we know. Somebody better show me how, before I fall any deeper. Think I better leave right now. That's a good idea, George. I think you should. And close the door on your way out. Then we'll get on to dealing with Kerry, the other bonesman, and whatever else the NWO has in store. That's the problem. They've got 57 varieties of George W. Bush to serve up to you. And that's the inside track. This has been Fintan Don reporting. Details are on Mysteries of the Mind. Just click on Latest News. Or you'll also find your link to the chat room if you want to join in during the show and discuss with others, or even put questions to Alex's guest. And speaking of Alex, here he is, the man who put the icon back in iconoclastic, the one and only Alex Merklinger.
Alex Merklinger's Mysteries of the Mind. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
The radio signal from another world.
The physical, the mental, the spiritual, and the answers to health, happiness, and life.
I'm trying to free your mind, but I can only show you the door.
You're the one that has to walk through.
And now your host, Alex Merklinger.
Oh, everybody, good evening. Welcome to our show tonight. It's going to be a wild show, as you all know, as you all have been waiting. But I want to thank you for your comments, pro and con, from our guest last night. Some of you, actually only one of you, thought that I was too harsh on him. And I guess you misunderstood when I was joking with him at the end, and I called him a killer, although that was his word. He said he was a killer. Nice guy, though. Nice guy. What I think I want to do is I want to follow up on the mad cow situation, because Fintan shared with us some information about some extensive research that's being done over in Great Britain today by one individual who has found a direct connecting link between magnesium. And I got some information from Mary Sparrowdancer. And Mary also shows the link between fluoride and magnesium. So there is a great deal of information, let's say parallel information, with what a lot of scientists are trying to say, that mad cow comes because we feed cattle, other cattle, diseased cattle who have died, and they grind them up and then they feed them with their blood and their brain and their marrow and, excuse me, I hope nobody's eating out there. But I have to tell you, in hearing Dave last night, I guess it's not a failing of mine, I'm sorry. I don't accept that. But it sure doesn't fit in with what I believe in. And I don't think I was mean to him. As a matter of fact, I thought I was very nice. Anyway, I am going to get to come on hopefully next week with us, somebody who I had on the show several years ago. Now, today he is very popular. When I first had him on, like many people, he hadn't done a whole lot. But Howard Lyman was the fellow who was in the lawsuit against Oprah Winfrey when she announced on her show, on her TV show, Oprah, that she was not going to eat meat anymore. And especially cattle. So the Cattlemen's Association sued her and Howard Lyman because he was on there. Howard is a fourth generation cattle rancher. And when Howard got so sick, I think he had a heart attack or a stroke and he was near death, he began to realize why. And he has been, well, ever since he was on our show, ever since he was on the Oprah show, he is trying to tell people, do not eat the beef that you buy in the store, which is what Dave Lothan said last night. I told Ardeth today, I said, I will never eat, and you all know, hamburgers is the greatest food in the world for me. Even when I was a vegetarian, I'd go buy a McDonald's. You could smell the rancidness of the meat, but my mouth would still water. Because back in those days, I think, you know, they were approaching 10 million hamburgers sold, and then 50 and all that. I was the one that made the biggest dent. Well, then I began to realize, well, geez, you don't want to eat McDonald's hamburgers because they've got to be, as Dave said last night, the worst meat there is. And I was a vegetarian for 8 years, and I never lost that that taste for him. Oh, I tried all the other ones. I tried the soy burgers. I tried the sawdust burgers. I tried the flour burgers, and none of them even came close. But after hearing him last night, and I've known this information, you all know the information. It's bad for us. Raising cattle is the most least productive use of land and water and air. However, there seem to be certain people out there who have an agenda, like Dave was saying last night, that these conglomerates are gobbling up the family ranches, family farms. And when they do it, they could care less. Anyway, I'm going to try to get Howard Lyman. I am still, if I can find where I have stored so many of my old shows, I'm going to get the two shows that I told you about last night. Dr. Virgil Hulse was on, and this is 8 years ago, and he was warning us, but this was many years before anybody had ever really heard of mad cow disease and the dangers of it. But Dr. Hulse was telling us way back when of the dangers, and he said it is rampant within the United States 8 years ago. Then we hear from Dave last night that he says the FDA is not even checking cattle anymore. Now, I don't know the truth in that, but that's what he said. This is a guy that was in the business. Anyway, I got to read some stuff to you. My buddy, Bob Cadell, as usual. I don't know how he finds this stuff. This is a quote from Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin said, "Beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy." Well, I've had a beer every once in a while. I enjoy it. Frank Sinatra said, he said, "I feel sorry for people who don't drink. When they wake up in the morning, that's as good as they're going to feel all day." And Henny Youngman, he said, "When I read about the evils of drinking, I gave up reading." Stephen Wright, who I don't know who it is, but obviously a very intelligent person, he says, 24 hours a day, 24 beers in a case. Coincidence? I think not. And Brian O'Rourke said, "When we drink, we get drunk. When we get drunk, we fall asleep. When we fall asleep, we commit no sin. When we commit no sin, we go to heaven. So, let's all get drunk and go to heaven." Good thinking. Only a beer drinker could come up with something like that. Jack Handy, who again, I'm not sure who he is, but he says, "Sometimes when I reflect back on all the beer I drink, I feel shamed. Then I look into the glass and think about the workers in the brewery and all of their hopes and dreams. If I didn't drink this beer, they might be out of work, and their dreams would be shattered. Then I say to myself, it is better that I drink this beer and let their dreams come true than be selfish and worry about my liver." That's good, Jack. It's always good to have smart people. Dave Barry, who I love, he has a column in a lot of the newspapers. Matter of fact, I think I was quoting from him last night on some stuff about dogs. But Dave Barry says, "Without question, the greatest invention in the history of mankind is beer. Oh, I grant you that the wheel was also a fine invention, but the wheel does not go nearly as well with pizza." Good, good. "Remember I before E, except in Budweiser. To some it's a six-pack. To me, it's a support group. Salvation in a can." And then saving the best for last, as explained by Cliff Clavin, C-L-A-V-I-N, Clavin of Cheers. You remember Cliff? I don't remember the actor's name, but he was the mailman. And he said one afternoon at Cheers, Cliff Clavin was explaining the Buffalo Theory to his buddy Norm. Here's how it went. He says, "Well, you see, Norm, it's like this. A herd of buffalo can only move as fast as the slowest buffalo. And then when the herd is hunted, it's the slowest and weakest ones at the back that are killed first. This natural selection is good for the herd as a whole, because the general speed and health of the whole group keeps improving as the regular killing of the weakest members. In much the same way, the human brain can only operate as fast as the slowest brain cells. Excessive intake of alcohol, as we know, kills brain cells. But naturally, it attacks the slowest and weakest brain cells first. In this way, regular consumption of beer eliminates the weaker brain cells, making the brain a faster and more efficient machine. That's why you always feel smarter after a few beers." Now, I know a lot of people go, "Oh, that is disgusting. Oh, you know, he's talking about encouraging people to drink." Oh, I am not. Grow up. if you haven't had a beer every once in a while, go have one. I think that's a marvelous thing. You all know that we have on as our guest tonight, David Icke. We're going to talk about many different things. Some of the things that we are going to talk about, not only about David's new book, but one of the things that I want to, because if you remember, David was going to be on, oh golly, what, a week ago or more than that? Right after I had on Jackie McCauley. Because her daughter was one of the kids at the McMartin School who was molested. At 23 years old, she is still not doing well. And the kids there talked about the tunnels, and I think the caves, where they were taken and all these things happened. And, of course, nobody believed them. Well, over the years, some of the things that I have found and I have read are pretty, pretty weird. All right? Let me go back to the mid-60s. I knew a fellow when we were putting together Silver Mind Control. There was a fellow from Texas who I got to know pretty well. His name was Hap Arnold. And his father was the highest-ranking general in the Air Force, General Hap Arnold. Now, I used to live back east. I was born and raised back east, as you all know. And I thought, you know, I was fairly worldly, because everybody from New York is. And having been raised there, I thought I was real smart ass. I had done a lot of athletics. I'd done it professionally, and, you know, I thought I was hot stuff. This was actually before all my so-called fame started, because that only really happened with all the magazine and newspaper articles from around the world. After we had put together and began to teach this concept of mind control all over the country, all over the world, actually. But I remember Hap Arnold saying, this is the dad, and he was saying about how in southern Colorado there was a mountain where the UFOs and ETs resided. And let me tell you, you have to put yourself in a position of being an ultra, ultra straight person. I wore wingtip shoes. I only wore suits, all right? If you remember, even a little while after this, when I opened my institute in New York City and my offices there, I would not allow anyone that worked for me, any male, to come into Manhattan, to come to the offices, which was the office for all of the operation from Chicago East, without a suit and tie on. No sport coats. That's how straight it was. I mean, it was absurd. So when Hap Arnold told us this, this had to be absolutely the furthest thing from my reality. ETs? I didn't even know the term. You know, it took me years to understand, instead of them saying extra, well, I can't even remember how I used to say it, because now it's still kind of a weird word, as an extraterrestrials. And his father is telling us that there is a base in a mountain there, just outside of Alamosa, Colorado. And it's Mount Blanca. I never heard of this stuff. I thought it was just a crackpot. So obviously, you know, watch out what you make fun of, because you're going to be it one day. All of a sudden, I moved to Colorado. Well, I moved all around the country first, teaching. After I closed up the institute in New York City, and I rewrote an advanced course, which I called Mind Development. I did that for years. Taught it all over the world. And I bought a motorhome. And I'm traveling all around the United States and Canada for 2 years in a motorhome. I lived in L.A. for a while until the earthquake happened. Then I said, I'm out of here. Moved up to Portland, Oregon. Then finally moved to Denver, Colorado. And one day, I'm traveling. I don't even know why I'm going down to L.A. Oh, I know why. Because we had adopted a young boy there and became kind of his guardians. And he was going to the college in Alamosa, Adams State College. I'm going down there, and I don't know if I had realized it before this or not. Geez, I hope so. But all of a sudden, I'm going through Mount Blanca. And I said, Mount Blanca? That's where the E.T., that's where the flying saucers are. And everybody looked at me, and they go, like, duh. You know, like, what rock did you crawl out from under? And then I got to know a guy by the name of, Chris. What's Chris's last name? He wrote the book, A Mysterious Valley, and then some. And he was the first writer to find, what was it, Skippy the Horse, the first mutilated animal there. And then they started to do it with cattle. But he wrote the book, Mysterious Valley, basically highlighting the cattle mutilations, but also some of the verbal history of the Indians in that area. And they said how they came out from underneath the ground to repopulate the earth, and in this area, right around Crestone, which is at the base of Mount Blanca, right near there, is one of the entrances or exits, depending on which way you're going, of the underground civilizations and underground tunnels. So I'm thinking, don't pull this on me. Then I started to read a lot more about it, and I met a lot of people who knew so much about these underground cities, these underground tunnels. I knew a guy that had seen one of these tunnel borers, and he said, we never built it. This thing was thousands of years old, everybody. And I'm thinking, geez, I wonder what he's smoking. And then you keep hearing these things, and then I had my radio show, and all of a sudden, on the radio show, I hear about a city in, or a town, actually, in New Mexico called Dulce. D-U-L-C-E, I think it is. Dulce, and they had the Dulce Wars. And I said, what the hell were the Dulce Wars? And he said, oh. Now, get this. And later on, I met, supposedly, somebody who was on my show, I think, or I just met him somewhere, and he had been in the Army, Air Force, Army, whatever it was, and he was involved. He was a newly stationed officer in Dulce, New Mexico, when a war broke out underground in tunnels between our armed forces, whether it was Air Force or Army, I don't recall right now, and, get this, and ETs. And I figured, oh, geez. Now, this is quite a while ago. But then all of a sudden, I start to hear people mention Dulce, the Dulce Wars, the underground city in Dulce, New Mexico. Well, Dulce is not too far from us. And about 3 or 4 months ago, Arthur and I drove down there. Well, Dulce is one of the Indian reservation towns. And we went all over the place. We saw the mountain. I don't recall the name of it right now, but we saw the mountain where supposedly it's inside this mountain where the military, U.S. military, has underground base, and also the ETs did. And for some reason, probably because our government has never kept a treaty, I think in the history of the government, they screw everybody. Geez, you remember when we had Russell Means on? He said there were 300 and some odd treaties that the United States government made with the Indians, and they broke every single one of them. Well, that's what caused the war. I know for a fact that David Icke knows about them. Everybody hang on, because I'm going to go get our guest now. Let me just, of course, I'm not going to play my intro music for you again, because you'll be gagging there. However, I don't want you to gag when you hear this kid, because you know what I feel. I honestly feel as though this and this young man and Charlotte Church, without a doubt, have to be angels from God for all of us, because they are so beautiful. Enjoy. Everybody, I have to cut Josh off. I apologize. I know. But we have two Davids waiting on the line for us with bated breath. We have David Booth and David Icke. And David's, good evening. David Icke, good morning to you. And welcome to Mysteries of the Mind, both you young gentlemen. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, Alex. Yep, good.
And from Dave here, thanks you, Alex.
Yeah, and this has been a long time coming, so I thank both of you for finally making it a reality. And David Icke, I mean, I've been a great reader of your books for years. I think since I was a young man, but I'm not. I don't think I fall in that category anyway. But I have really enjoyed your research ability, and then I heard you used to play professional soccer, is that right?
Yeah, I used to, yeah. I used to be a goalkeeper. They used to call me Cinderella because I kept missing the ball, you see. it was a time of my life when I thought professional sport was going to be what I was going to do, and then I got arthritis out of nowhere at the age of 21, and it put me on a different course into journalism.
Wow.
And then into television as an anchorman, and then I saw behind the facade, and I've been exposing that ever since.
So, your first book was what?
It was a book called on these subjects, Truth Vibrations.
Okay.
Which was a book I wrote in 1990, describing things that had happened in my life, which just changed the whole direction of the way I saw the world and what I was doing.
Yeah,
and of happened in around 89, when I was an anchorman for the BBC and also a national spokesman for the British Green Party. Strange things started to happen to me, and basically where it started is that when I was in a room alone, I had this feeling constantly there was somebody else with me. And this went on for cool, month after month after month, and eventually a series of amazing things happened through 1990-91, which opened my mind to the fact that the world was not just a little bit not like I thought it was, but nothing like I thought it was. And this is this started me on a journey of realizing that the world we saw on the mainstream media and in the education system, etc., was just a front. It was just a movie designed to obscure and hide what was really going on.
Yeah.
And you really couldn't make up what's really going on because it's so fantastic compared with what we are led to believe from cradle to grave is the world we're living in. And the longer this journey has gone on, the information has gone from a trickle to a flood to a tidal wave, and has encompassed a massive stream of subjects that at first hearing or looking for the first time appear to have no connections whatsoever. But the deeper you go, everything connects. The web includes everything from ancient history to the symbolism that is all around us that comes from the ancient history of this conspiracy, to the banking system, to and this is the real foundation of the conspiracy. It's the nature of reality itself. If you understand how we create reality, you have the ability to manipulate the reality that people think they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And that's what this conspiracy really is.
How many years?
At the foundation level, it's the manipulation of our perception of reality, and it's going on all the time.
How many years has this conspiracy been going on, where we've been not receiving the truth from anybody, it seems, whether it's from the governments, plural, or the educational systems, or the churches, or whomever?
It goes back thousands of years. Where it really starts is still open for discussion, but you can pick it up very clearly in ancient Babylon and move it forward from there into what we call the modern world. The Church of Babylon moved to Rome and became the Roman Church.
Right.
And this is why the foundations of the Roman Church, even its, quote, holy days, are merely the holy days of Babylon under different names, just like the Trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost is just the Trinity of Babylon, Semiramis, Nimrod, Tammuz, under different names. And the symbolism that they used way back there, and of course ancient Babylon is now the land we call Iraq, appropriately, have been taken through history, as have the interbreeding bloodlines that were in control in Babylon. Have been brought through history to the control of the modern world. These interbreeding bloodlines that were perceived as the royal bloodlines of the ancient world, the ones that were claiming the right to rule because of their DNA, basically that's what they were claiming, the right to rule because of their genetics. Those interbreeding bloodlines moved up from the ancient Near and Middle East into Europe, where they became the aristocracy and royal families of Europe, and then through the empires of Europe, especially the British, they were exported all over the world. And when apparently the colonial powers like Britain and France and all the rest, as they apparently gave, quote, independence to the former colonies and moved back out of those countries, what actually happened was a scam, a sleight of hand, which has been fundamental to creating the world we live in today. And that sleight of hand was the move from in-your-face dictatorship, overt dictatorship, colonial rule, where the people knew who the ultimate controllers were, and it wasn't them, to covert control, which is control that you can't see, touch, and taste. And if people do not rebel against not being free when they believe they are, you can sit in a prison cell with bars you can see, and you know you're in a prison cell, but sit in a cell with bars you can't see, and you'll sit there forever not realizing where you actually are.
That's right.
And so when these colonial powers apparently gave independence to the colonies, like the United States as it became, they left out there the bloodline and the secret society network through which the bloodline manipulates itself into power. And they've gone on running these countries ever since. The difference is that since 1776, the Declaration of Independence, and the coming of George Washington, etc., people in America have believed that Americans are controlling America, when really it's the center of this web, which is in Europe, not America. It's the same with Australia. It's the same with all these former colonies. They've gone on being controlled covertly ever since they were apparently given independence. And they're working to a long-term plan, agenda, to take the planet over. And we're seeing this unfold by the day, and we have been for a long time now, because the foundation that you need for the few to dictate and control the many is to centralize decision-making. The more diversity of decision-making you have, the less control you're going to have over it. So therefore, you need to centralize decision-making in all areas of our lives. And this is why, with every decade that has passed, more and more power has gone into fewer and fewer hands in political decision-making, like the European Union here, where now bureaucrats in Brussels dictate to the whole of Europe.
Right.
And you have control of the media going into fewer and fewer hands. The transnational corporations that control basically the food chain now on the planet are controlled by very, very few people. And so it has gone on. And what people call globalization, this word that's been discovered in the last few years, the globalization is simply the agenda unfolding before our eyes. What is globalization? It's the incessant centralization of global power in all areas of our lives, which is turning the globe into a plantation, basically. The idea, ultimately, is to create a world government which would dictate to every country, a world central bank that would dictate to every country economically.
Right, yeah.
A world army that would impose the will of the world government on countries that didn't wish to fall into line, and a microchipped population linked to a global computer, which sounds Orwellian, and so it should, because the Orwellian world is what we're living in now, but actually is unfolding now in terms of people being microchipped.
And yeah.
The idea is to have every child microchipped as they leave the womb, and that's coming unless we wake up.
David, one of the things that I've always wondered about, because I know this plan has been going on literally for thousands of years for total world domination, but why haven't they made their move earlier? Because over a period of 3, 4, 5, 6, 10,000 years, they could in quotes, of course, they could have made their move and obliterated us or enslaved all of us even more than we are right now. So why haven't they made their move before now? I mean, it seems like they're in a mad scramble now to accomplish everything they've been planning for these thousands of years.
Well, I think there is a mad scramble for a simple reason that, and I've been a kind of barometer of this in a way since the early 90s. When I was talking about this then, a man and a dog used to be interested.
Yeah.
But now there is a massive awakening going on, and awakening, as I'm sure we'll get into today, is exactly the word that's happening, but people are waking up from the trance.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a mad scramble to get these this structure of power and imposition and dictatorship,
yeah,
into place before the wake up reaches the portions where the whole house of cards comes down, which it's going to do. In terms of why now, there's many questions that obviously had to create a situation where they destroyed enough diversity and destroyed enough diversity of decision making to make the centralization of the dictatorship globally possible. And we're now in a situation, not least because of the computer network and all this stuff, where they can actually control centrally in a way they couldn't before.
They're making a mad scramble now, and we always use the term they. Who is the powers behind the thrones, so to speak, the puppet masters, excuse me, who are pulling the strings for all of the world leaders and all the people before the public? Who are they? Is it
well?
Who?
First of all, they're not the people you see in public.
Right.
I had a journalist ask me once, say to me once, "So you think George Bush is running the world? I'm not sure George Bush is running George Bush." These people are puppets.
Yeah.
They're in awareness puppets, and some are not in awareness puppets. But that's what they are. They're there to introduce the agenda. The agenda they're introducing is dictated from behind the scenes, not least because if you're really the ones with your hands on the tillers of power, then you don't want to be in a public situation where you could be identified and targeted. This is why the real power is never in the hands of those that you actually see. They have some power over those below them in the hierarchy, but they are dictated to and in fear of those above them and those in the shadows. This is a question, Alex, that I asked myself on this journey many years ago. It was obvious that if this had gone on over thousands of years, there had to be a common theme and a common denominator that was pulling together all these people and groups through the centuries that had work to advance this agenda. I mean, why would you do that? Why would you dedicate your life to advancing an agenda that you knew was a long, long into the future in terms of its fruition, long after you have left this world? It was a good question. And as I met insiders, as I studied the ancient history, ancient accounts, and met people like Shaman in South Africa and other places that were carriers of this verbal knowledge, put all this stuff together, it's very clear that the obsession with bloodline, which these people have had throughout this period and certainly have today, is not because of snobbery and they want to, you know, keep the genes up, you know. It's actually much more fundamental than that. And the reason that they're obsessed with bloodline, the reason they interbreed with each other so obsessively, is because in the far, far ancient world, there was an interbreeding between humans and a non-human race,
right,
which created a hybrid bloodline, which was perceived to be the bloodline of the gods. And this ancient idea of the divine right to rule, the right to rule because of your bloodline, is not actually the divine right, the infinite consciousness that is all that exists. It is actually the gods as they were perceived, this non-human race.
Mm-hmm.
And even today, about 2 hours from me sitting here, we have a head of state in Britain, the Queen of England, who is only head of state because of her DNA. It's still going. What people don't realize, if you don't do the research, is that when the overt control by royal dictatorship started to be rejected by the people, these bloodlines moved out of that into control of the banking system, what we call today politics, control of the media, and they control now covertly, which, like I said earlier, is the best and most effective form of control. So behind this manipulation is some kind of non-human race, non-human force that is seeking to take the planet over by giving us the impression that we're being controlled by you. may not actually. But even that's only one level of it. You go beyond that, and it gets even bigger than that, as I go into in this new book, Tales from the Time Loop. But the ancient accounts of this interbreeding can be found all over the ancient world. Every culture has accounts and legends of this interbreeding process, which created these hybrid bloodlines that are working to control the planet in the way that I've talked about. And also, once you start realizing about the nature of reality and the fact that when we look through our eyes, we're not seeing everything that exists in that space. We're only seeing the frequency range that our five senses can access.
Right.
This is why if you're in a room with an animal, particularly a cat, that is very, very sensitive, they often react to what is to us empty space, and we can't understand it. What's the cat doing? It seems to be reacting to something, but there's nothing there. Well, there's nothing there to our frequency range, but to its frequency range, it's seeing in that space something that we can't see. And once you realize that, you realize that in the space that we are looking at is infinity. And so all possibility exists in the space that we're looking at, not just that tiny fraction of frequency range that we can perceive and we call the world. And the more that I've researched this, the more that I've understood this, this non-human force that is behind this manipulation has the ability to move between frequencies. For people who haven't come across this, imagine the radio stations that are broadcasting to the area that the listeners are in now. All the frequencies that the radio and television stations are occupying the space, not only that you are looking at, but you are sitting in. They are not interfering with each other, and they're not aware of each other, and you're not aware of them. That's because they're on different frequencies. They're in different worlds, in effect. And if you get a radio station, a radio set, and you tune it to one frequency, say radio number one, then that's what you get, radio number one. You don't get anything else because you're not tuned to them. You move from radio number one to radio number two, and now you get radio two. But radio one hasn't stopped broadcasting just because you have moved from it. It goes on broadcasting. It's just you're not accessing anymore because you're now on radio two.
Right.
And so in the same space that we're occupying is infinity. And it appears that just outside of the frequency range of the five senses is where these entities operate from. And they can move in and out of this frequency. And when they move into this frequency, suddenly people say, "Hey, did you see that? My goodness, did you see that?" And when they move out, it's like, "Hey, it's just disappeared in front of my eyes." No, it hasn't. It's moved beyond the frequency range that your eyes can access. And they appear to use the human physical body, which is just a five-sense expression of or vehicle for consciousness to experience this particular frequency range we call the world. And so if you could see just beyond the frequency range of people like the Bushes and these guys that run the world, you would see a very, very different entity to the one that appears to be seen when he's on CNN. And what happened, Alex, is that over the last, I guess, what is it now, from about 96, I started meeting people all over the world from every walk of life you can imagine who started telling me that they had seen people, often in positions of power, but not always, change into a reptilian-type humanoid form and then go back again. And I heard it from so many different people, and I didn't, you know, communicate this for a while because I'm thinking, what the heck's this about? And then you start reading the ancient accounts and you find the same stories being told hundreds of years ago. You talk to people like Credo Mutwa, the official historian of the Zulu Nation in South Africa, who's been initiated into this stuff for decades. He's in his 80s now. And he tells you the same story and then calls you and says, how did you know about this? I know about what, and he starts to tell me all the stuff that he's been initiated into and experienced over decades, and it's exactly the same as what these people around the world are have communicated to me. So there appears, in short, to be a non-human race which seems to take a reptilian form, though there are other non-reptilian aspects to this story as well, which manipulate this frequency range, this reality, by hiding, literally, behind the illusion of a human physical form. And I can't, I really, you've come across this movie, Alex, called They Live. It's a John Carpenter movie.
Yeah, I did. Sure.
Which is about this very thing.
Yep.
It's about a non-human race that takes over the planet by hiding within human form. And there was another movie called Arrival, the first Arrival movie with Charlie Sheen, that also took the same theme. And it's very, very accurate in terms of the themes that they're portraying.
I know that you are one of the proponents of the reptilian deal. I have not gotten into that, David, only because I find that it doesn't fit in with at least what I'm looking for or going towards now. But you say that even in some of the indigenous races around the world, they talk about the reptilian people.
Oh yeah, all around the world. There was a book written. It was called something like Caverns and Concealed Places, in which the author looked at all these ancient folk tales and all the folklore and the stories of demons and people under the earth and goblins and all these different expressions of this recurring folklore story under different names and different themes. And he found enormous common themes in his research. One was around 80% of the descriptions of these entities in folklore were took a reptilian form, that they were obsessed with genetics and interbreeding with humans. And all these themes that I'm talking about in terms of the reptilian phenomena can be found in these folklores and ancient stories and accounts all over the world, including the ability of entities described in these accounts to move between human and reptilian form. And then you read the accounts of people who've written books and gone public about their experiences in mind control projects and what have you in the modern world, and they describe often the same phenomena of this shape-shifting, as it's called, of people between human and reptilian form. I was on the phone to a lady years ago now, before I'd gone public on any of this. I hadn't talked about it. It was all on the back burner. And it was a lady who was the head of Parents Against Ritual Abuse in America. And in the middle of this conversation, which was not about what we talked about now, it was about ritual abuse, she said to me, what if you can help me? Can you explain why so many of my clients, people who've been abused in rituals, etc., say that the participants turned into reptiles? Can you... are they dressing up, she said, to confuse them?
Yeah.
And then I went to the House of Lords in London to meet a handful of the members of the House of Lords who knew that this conspiracy we're talking about was going on. I'm talking the political and economic level, etc.
Right.
And they wanted me to talk to them about what I knew. And in that meeting was someone who kept saying some very, very interesting things about Princess Diana and her death in Paris in 1997. This was about, I think this was late 97, early 98 when this meeting took place. So the Diana thing was very fresh. And afterwards I said to her, how do you know this stuff about Diana? It's very interesting. She said, my best friend was the closest confidant of Diana for 9 years on all these esoteric things that Diana couldn't talk to anyone else about because they would have thought she was crazy. And she said, I think I can get this lady to talk to you. So about 2 weeks later, she brings this lady over to where I live, and she talked to me for the first time. She talked to anybody about what happened. Her name was Christine Fitzgerald. She's a hands-on healer and esoteric healer and into all these alternative areas of healing.
David,
and,
just hang on to that for a minute.
Used to have
David.
Diana go along to see her, and she also
Hey, Dave.
David.
The reptilian thing out.
David, just hang on a minute. We have to take a news break, but we will be right back, everybody. David Icke, David Booth, I'm Alex Merklinger, and this is Mysteries of the Mind on the Millennium Radio Network. Stay there.
This is the Millennium Radio Network. And you're on the Inside Track on World News for Thursday, the 19th of February, 2004. Sponsored by NeemWell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. Coming up later in this bulletin, one distraught father reacts to news that the CDC lied about the link between vaccines and his son's autism.
I have to live with the memory of my child's cries. And knowing that each vaccination that we gave him that I held him down for was injuring him.
But first, either John Kerry or John Edwards would trounce President in the Gallup poll just released. Kerry, the Democratic frontrunner, would beat Bush by 55-43%. Edwards would win by 54-44. The collapse in Bush support has been dramatic and fast. In early February, Bush was level with both Kerry and Edwards. The poll results throw Karl Rove's re-election strategy into disarray. He hadn't planned to defrost Osama until later this year, but the slide in Bush support must be halted, as it was late last year when Saddam Hussein saved the Bush dinosaur from electoral extinction. So, in a completely unrelated development, General Richard Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said today that the U.S. is intensifying efforts to capture Osama bin Laden, who's reputed to be hiding out on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. The top U.S. general said U.S. intelligence agencies have spent an enormous amount of time on the effort. I believe him. After all, look at the spadework it took to dig that spider hole for the Saddam double. Lieutenant General David Barno, commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, is already expecting to capture Osama soon. Just pull the plug on that freezer and give him a couple of weeks to thaw. He'll look as good as he did the day he died in the Saudi hospital back before 9/11. In another completely unrelated development to Bush's poll problems, the Election Assistance Commission is to speed up allocation of $2.3 billion in federal funds to buy new electronic voting systems. DeForest Soaries, the commission's chairman, said the funds will be dispersed about mid-May. The British government, meanwhile, is to give permission for the first commercial cultivation of a genetically modified crop, despite 80% of Britons being opposed to GM crops and just 2% prepared to eat them. Former colleague of Tony Blair, ex-Environment Minister Michael Meacher, accused Blair of caving into pressure from the US government and the multinational biotech companies. Now, a special report in association with Kathy McMahon of NeemWell.com. The truth is out. Mercury in vaccines causes developmental problems in children. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control has known since the year 2000. They lied and used staged studies to hide the truth, and we have the proof from internal CDC discussions. Today, the official CDC line is still that vaccines are safe on their website and in their publications. The CDC says exactly what most vaccine manufacturers say.
That there is no scientific data supporting any link between developmental delay in autism and our vaccines at this point.
At this point, that's a lie constructed in secret by the CDC and the vaccine makers. In February 2000, a CDC study found significant links between mercury in vaccines and autism in children. The CDC, the FDA and manufacturers met in June 2000 to figure out what to do. NBC affiliate First Coast News used the Freedom of Information Act to get hold of a transcript of that secret meeting. It details the reactions of those at the meeting to seeing clear proof of the damage caused by vaccines. It included comments like, "We've got a serious problem." Another comment, "It worries me. I don't want my grandson to get thimerosal-containing vaccine until we know better what's going on." Finally, the meeting concluded with the words, "We have asked you to keep this information confidential." And that's what happened. The CDC buried the study and said nothing for 3 years. Then, late last year, they selectively extracted information from the February study 2000 and published a new study contradicting the earlier results and clearing mercury vaccines of any link to neurological problems in children. Five-year-old Ryan Anderson of Jacksonville Beach is now recovering from autism-type developmental problems, which began right after he received the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, says Ryan's father, Bruce Anderson. Had the CDC spoken in 2000, Ryan would have not been made ill. It's a realization that eats away at his father, Bruce.
I have to live with the memory of my child's cries and knowing that each vaccination that we gave him that I held him down for was injuring him.
Ryan's improving now because his doctor knows what the CDC won't admit. Dr. Jeff Bradstreet of Melbourne has documented how some children are unable to cope with the harmful effects of mercury.
There are children who don't detox heavy metals well because of a defect genetically. The more mercury that we expose them to, the more problems they're going to have.
And that's the inside track on mercury vaccines. Some children cannot handle them, and I'm sure there's going to be legal repercussions to that information coming out. Thanks to Kathy of namewell.com for that. If you'd like a copy of a special report on that, including extracts to those audio clips and video, just email Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, at namewell.com with subscribe in the subject line, and she'll send those out to you. Now, it's not Planet X, but it's the largest non-planetary body in our solar system. A new planetoid has been discovered in an orbit beyond Neptune's. The chunk of ice and rock is about 1,000 miles in diameter, almost as big as the planet Pluto, taking 300 years to go around the Sun. It's the second body discovered in the area. Back in 2002, a smaller planetoid called Quawar was discovered. And Mel Gibson's father just won't stay shut up. He's back on air, repeating his claim that the Holocaust was exaggerated. Hudson Gibson was interviewed on Speak Your Peace, NYWFNR radio, and the mouthy old cuss did just that. He spoke his piece, arguing that the Holocaust was maybe not all fiction, but most of it is. The 85-year-old was only warming up. He went on to tell host Steve Fernstein that Jews were out to create one world religion and one world government, which involves Jewish bankers, the U.S. Federal Reserve, and the Vatican, among others. You're getting close there, guy. Keep it up. Drudge Report should be named Sludge Report after those exclusive stories about John Kerry's intern didn't pan out. But I wonder, will Sludge be as quick to pick up this story about conservative moralizer William Bennett, who comes down hard on those who don't measure up to his high standards? But is there a leather-bound dominatrix bodybuilder in Las Vegas who comes down rather hard on William Bennett? What story is that, you ask? None. There's no such story yet. And finally this evening, we're in a position to exclusively reveal, as a result of those falling poll numbers for President Bush, that Karl Rove has now selected a new theme song for Bush 2004. I think I better do it right now, before I fall any deeper. I think I better do it right now, being weaker and weaker. Yeah, we know. Somebody better show me how, before I fall any deeper. Think I better leave right now. That's a good idea, George. I think you should. And close the door on your way out. Then we'll get on to dealing with Kerry, the other bonesmen, and whatever else the NWO has in store. That's the problem. They've got 57 varieties of George W. Bush to serve up to you. And that's the inside track. This has been Fintan Dunn reporting. Details are on Mysteries of the Mind. Just click on Latest News, where you'll also find your link to the chat room if you want to join in during the show and discuss with others or even put questions to Alex's guest. And speaking of Alex, here he is, the man who put the icon back in iconoclastic, the one and only Alex Merklinger.
Alex Merklinger's Mysteries of the Mind. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Radio signal from another world.
The physical, the mental, the spiritual, and the answers to tell them, happiness, and life.
I'm trying to free your mind, but I can only show you the door. You're the one that has to walk through.
And now your host, Alex Merklinger.
And everybody, welcome back to us today. Tonight, you are listening to Mysteries of the Mind, being brought to you from the Silver Bullet in northern New Mexico, Ilfeld, New Mexico. and it's the Millennium Radio Network, and we have with us two really interesting guests, because David Booth is kind of a regular on our show now, and we have David Icke with us, who is staying up all night from the motherland, England. And gentlemen, thanks again so much for staying up and for joining us, because I know it's going to continue to get more interesting as we go on. So thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. And Alec, I'm going to backtrack here a little bit, because, and so you can join in on a conversation that David Icke and I were having during the break.
Yeah.
That both of us have noticed over the years how much more, and acceleratingly so, people are becoming aware of the research that people like David Icke and I have been doing,
mm-hmm.
and others like us.
Sure.
And we are entering an interesting time period, that on June the 8th of this year, 2004,
right,
begins the transit of Venus. This event is an 8-year cycle event that only occurs every 105 years or so.
Okay.
And this event has been foretold in our prophecies, predictions, etc. And it's interesting that this cycle that begins on June 8th, 2004, this cycle will end in 2012 on the exact date that the Mayan calendar ends.
What do you think the connection is?
David, why don't you address that?
Well, there's definitely an acceleration going on, and it's a cycle that's been getting quicker and quicker and quicker, and it's becoming more blatantly so. I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but time seems to be passing, or what we call time, it seems to be passing so fast now. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like, a year goes by, and you think, where the heck did that go?
Yeah, right.
I know we say in England, you're getting older when the policemen look younger and all this stuff, and so your perception of everything changes in terms of time and everything. But it's more than that. There is a tremendous acceleration going on. Not only that, it's expressing itself, of course, in the number of changes that are going on in the world, the number of inventions and developments that are going on in the world. It's getting faster and faster and faster. And I remember that reading years and years ago about this cycle that was coming to a closure around 2012 in that window of time. And I remember someone saying to me once, If you ever spin a plate on a table or something, you spin it first of all, and it starts to move slowly. And as it moves towards the end of its cycle, it starts to move quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker.
Right.
And then right at the end, as it's coming to the end of this, this spin, you get that rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat stop. And when it's really, really spinning or moving very, very quickly before it comes to an end, and it's that kind of feel for the cycle that we are experiencing now. Everything is getting faster, 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 faster. And I think between now and 2012, I mean, obviously this acceleration is going to continue. And I know there are researchers into this on a scientific level who are coming to their mathematical conclusions and all this other stuff that they work with. That actually this thing is this cycle is going to move so fast in the end, it's going to be almost difficult to perceive and to understand, because everything's going to happen so fast. And so the Venus thing that David talks about, and then so many other things, they start to fit together into a pattern, and that pattern appears to be that we are coming to the end of a cycle of what you might call human evolution, whatever, which is going to transform the reality that we live in into a very different one. And when you start to realize that how we create reality, which is in our minds, the world around us, as quantum physics is increasingly confirming, and mystics and people like that have said for thousands of years, of course, the world around us is an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's an illusion based on our perception. Our sense of reality becomes our experience reality. As experiments have shown, you know, when information enters the eyes, it's very different to what we think is actually around us. When we look around us, we think we're looking with our eyes, but we're not. We're looking with our minds. When information enters the eyes, it's two-dimensional, it's upside down, and it's in a very different state to the world we think we're looking at. That world only exists in the visual cortex in the brain. And as experiments have shown, as that information passes into the eyes and goes through the brain to the visual cortex,
right.
a massive editing process takes place on the basis of our belief. Whatever our belief in reality is, will edit information out of what comes in the eyes that is at odds with that belief, and will put information detail in to there that supports the belief. In other words, what we believe is what we perceive. And when you look at a stage hypnotist, that is exactly what is happening. He implants into the subject the belief that there's an elephant in the room, or the woman next to him is naked, or whatever.
Right.
And the information enters the eyes without clearly an elephant in the room, and with the person next to them having clothes on. But then it passes through this belief implanted and gets edited, and by the time it hits the visual cortex, which is the only place where this world we think is around us exists in that form, suddenly the person's naked and there's an elephant sitting next to you.
Sure.
It's this implanted belief. And so if our perceptions of what we believe change, then our reality we experience changes with it. And we are going through at this time, on a massive and increasingly vast scale, a transformation of human perception of reality.
Right.
It's not the majority yet, but it is vastly increasing, probably by the day, around the world, as people literally wake up. As I mentioned earlier, we talk about people waking up to what is happening, waking up to a new understanding of the world, and that is exactly what's happening. It's mm-hmm. like the hypnotist is clicking the fingers. The moment he clicks the fingers and says, wake up, the person who saw the elephant ain't seeing the elephant anymore. He's seeing something very different, because his perception has changed by waking up from that implanted belief. That is what is happening in the world. And this cycle that David talks about is activating this changing perception. And this is why more and more people are just seeing the world differently without having to have any information to trigger that. I mean, getting information out is absolutely vital to make this most effective. But many people are just waking up spontaneously. I've met some people this week who they just started to see the world almost instantaneously in a completely different way to how they saw it before. And this is the cycle at work, which is the hypnotist clicking the fingers. It's a spiritual alarm clock going off that is waking people up from the trance. And so it's a very exciting time. And while the efforts to create this imposed global dictatorship appear to move on, I would suggest that actually what we're seeing is a period in which this whole thing is in its death throes, because the wake-up is going to outrun the imposition, and we're going to see that in these next few years through 2012.
What do you think as humanity wakes up? I know what they're waking up from. What are they waking up to?
They're waking up to whatever they choose to wake up to. We're doing that all the time, even down to the level, is the glass half full or is the glass half empty? Our perception is what creates our reality. This is why one person will look at a situation and they'll see it in a very negative way.
Sure.
Oh my goodness. And another person will look at the same situation and say, hey, this is great. It's a matter of perception. What we experience is what we is a reflection of our state of being. So we can, if we choose to do that, transform what is what know, it's all about choice, and it's all about our perceptions becoming our experienced reality. I mean, we can choose tonight, the three of us, to have a monumental row, an argument. It's a choice. We can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can choose to have a sensible, adult, friendly discussion. That's another choice. The choice we make fundamentally affects the experience that the three of us have tonight. And this is what's happening all the time. And so this is the fantastic kind of news that comes out of this understanding, is that what we experience is completely within our control, individually and collectively. And it's understanding that we have that power that can manifest a very different world to the one that we have experienced.
Sure.
If you think you are ordinary and powerless, that is your perception of reality, that is your belief, then you will experience a physical expression of that belief. You will live ordinary, powerless lives. Not because you are, but because you think you are.
Yeah.
Now, if when we start to realize, hey, we're not ordinary and powerless, we're actually an expression of infinite consciousness. There is no a little me, only infinite I. Then we can transform the way that we create our reality in the knowledge that we have that power to do that, instead of running along thinking we have to tag on the coattails of someone else's reality, a politician or a media mogul or a transnational corporation chief executive officer. We don't, but we are led to think we are, because if we take on that reality, then we're a piece of cake to control en masse. And what we're seeing as people wake up is the herd is breaking up. The hive mentality, the herd mentality, the fear of expressing uniqueness in a world of uniformity. This is what these are the barriers that break down when you start to realize who we really are, as opposed to what we're conditioned to believe we are from cradle to grave.
Well, yes, and Alex, you can see that right now, even in this country, that look at your own show, for example, the, you know, 500,000 listeners right now, and that's increasing every day.
Yeah.
But also we're seeing around the world that as people are waking up, we're seeing the move, another move, counter move, for more and more control of us.
Oh, absolutely.
Exhibited.
Sure.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, we are in a point now where irresistible, movable object are coming face to face. In other words, they are very clearly putting their heads above the trench. I was saying to David during the break how this control and imposition, this dictatorship that we talk about, is now becoming more and more blatant. And at the same time, the wake-up of so many more people, as David said, increasing vastly all the time,
right,
is also becoming more and more obvious. The difference is that the awakening is the irresistible force. The imposition thinks it's the immovable object, but it isn't, because it depends for its very existence on us believing in the sense of reality that it depends upon to exist and control us, i.e. we're ordinary men and women in the street with no power. We're just physical bodies, and we're just chemical reactions, and we kind of born, and then after a few seconds or 100 years we die, and then that's it really, and all that stuff. All this limitation of who we are, the limitation of perception of our power to control our own reality and our own destiny, that is what this imposition depends upon, which is why, literally for thousands of years, and more as we've gotten to the modern world, we've seen this suppression of information that challenges this idea that either we are subject to some dictatorial god, or there is no god of any kind, and there is no anything of any kind. We're just cosmic accidents of
chemical reaction and what they call evolution. It's really just just something we've got no control over. This is the perception of reality and who we are that has been imposed upon us, and things that have, and information that have challenged that have been suppressed all the way through this period. This is why visionaries have been considered so dangerous to those in authority
sure.
for thousands of years, right up to the present day.
Sure.
It's because a visionary is simply offering another version of reality to the prevailing one that the authorities depend upon for the very survival of this agenda. And so we're in a period now, where this changing perception of who we are is coming face to face with the desire to continue to impose the prevailing reality that the mm-hmm. agenda depends upon for its survival. So it's a time when we're not sparring anymore symbolically. We're actually in the ring, and we're looking at each other in the eyes here. And this is why they are pushing on this agenda of control so fast, is because they and crucially, the jewel in the crown of the agenda is the microchipped person, the microchipped people. The reason they want the microchip is not just electronic tagging, and so the computer knows where everyone is. That's just one level of it. The real reason is to externally manipulate our energy fields, our consciousness, our physical bodies, our electromagnetic field, all these different levels of us, to suppress this awakening. That's what the microchip's there for. And so that we need to resist that agenda more than any other, I would suggest.
Well,
and Alex, we can see a really good example of this, too. I was flying back from Washington last week, going mm-hmm. through airport security, and over on the side, the security had an 8-year-old girl who they were frisking down. This has nothing to do with terrorism. This is in your face.
Oh, sure.
We are trying to control you.
Right, exactly. And the problem is we allow them to, because by feeding into that, we empower them, and that's what has to stop. So
well, the thing is, Alex, that if you look through history, at any time a few have sought to impose their will on the many, the bottom line of doing that has been dividing and ruling the many. You have to divide the many. You have to break the herd up into warring factions, so that they're so busy fighting among themselves, they don't look up and see that there's strings attached to all of them, and all of them, all of those strings are actually held by the same people, the same force.
Absolutely.
And you also have to get a certain levels of the herd to benefit or perceive that they're benefiting from what you are imposing, again, to create this divide between those that will impose, help you impose your will on the many. This is why, you know, when you see so many people in uniform, they are just as much pawns in the game as those that they are imposing themselves upon. But they're just pawns of a different kind. They're pawns that are introducing and imposing this agenda on the mass of the people, like police and the military and all these people, when the vast majority of them and their families are going to be victims of this agenda eventually, as much as anyone else. And I've said this to journalists, and now we're starting to see it very clearly. I've said to them over the years, you know, you may laugh at the sort of stuff I'm saying, but, you know, you as journalists, as communicators of information to the people,
mm-hmm.
Are going to be among the major targets of this agenda, once it's reached a point where it can start to impose its will upon you in an even more blatant fashion. And now we're having in Britain journalists up in arms over this Hutton report, which castigated the BBC, because they're saying that it's creating a situation in which journalists can no longer be journalists. Well, I would suggest that journalists haven't been real journalists for a long time, if at all, but they're now starting to see that this imposition is turning its eyes on them, and
this is the way the divide and rule works. They get people within the herd to work for this agenda of control. The vast majority of them not realizing that that's what they're doing. And then when it's too late, they realize that they're victims of it as well.
And they've done this, David, throughout history. I mean, look at Nazi Germany. They did the same thing.
Precisely. There's that wonderful, I can't remember it word for word now, that wonderful statement by, was it Pastor Nehemiah, who talked about first they came for the Jews, and
yes.
I was not a Jew, so
right.
I did nothing. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I was not a trade unionist, so I did nothing. Then they came for the communists, and I was not a communist, so I did nothing. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me.
Right.
And this is the way that this system of dictatorship always works. It divides and rules. It gets people to look the other way when other people are being treated in a unjust, inhumane, grotesque manner, because, well, it's nothing to do with me, not affecting me. And then they realize too late, as I've just said about journalists and police and all these different people,
yeah.
that in the end there is a knock on the door, and suddenly it does apply to them. But by now, the whole thing has gone so far that there's nothing they can do about it.
Too late.
This is why we must fundamentally not fight among ourselves because we disagree on what religion to believe in, or we're middle class or upper class or working class, all these fault lines of division that are created to divide and rule us. If we fall for this, then we're just going to go through what you've just described, Alec. We're going to go through a global version of Nazi Germany, and the way different groups were picked off. Now it's the Muslims, now it's the Jews, now it's the so-and-so, etc.
Right.
And so we must unite on what affects us all, which is the fact that our basic human freedoms of expression and all other areas of freedom are being picked off by the day now. And it's no good saying, well, that person's freedom is being taken away, but it doesn't affect mine, because eventually it is going to affect yours.
Absolutely.
It's not as if they're targeting one group and then that's it, so it don't really matter to me. They're targeting the global population.
Yes.
But they cannot target the global population en masse at once. They have to pick off levels of it over a period of time, and that's what they've been doing, and that's what they'll continue to do.
Well, they started some of their experiments. I'm talking about, let's just say, the powers that be, the puppet masters who pull the strings on all the politicians over here in the States, and such as the picking up of all the guns, and they went down to Australia, and even U.S. Marines went down there and helped collect them because they wanted to practice on how they could do it here when they do it here.
Well, that's a very good point. Now, I don't own a gun. And I've never used a gun, and I don't want anything to do with guns, and nothing to do with them whatsoever. But this is a good point, going on from what I've just said.
Right.
If you are kind of anti-gun, that's the point of view, okay, and it's a legitimate one. But we need to move beyond that and ask a much more adult question. Why are they trying to take guns out of circulation among the population now?
Right.
Why is that? Why did the Nazis do that when they were on the same road within Germany and Europe in the 20th century? What is the benefit of doing that? The benefit of doing that is that if you are having you have an agenda to take over control in a fascist dictatorship of the population, then the last thing you want is the population armed and prepared to use their arms. You need to take them out of circulation first. It's one of the reasons, of course, the Nazis did it for the same reason. And so we need to move beyond our own belief system and our own prejudices, whatever they may be, and look at the bigger picture. And what they're doing, of course, is selling this thing on the basis that if we take guns out of circulation, there'll be less violent crime. Well, of course, that's nonsense, because it's not. If you're a criminal and you want a gun, it's a piece of cake, whether it's legal or illegal.
proven fact.
Doesn't stand up.
Sure.
So what is the real reason? And the real reason is they don't want an armed population
mm-hmm.
because it makes it more difficult to take them over and allows on physical level more resistance.
That's right.
I would suggest that the real resistance, however, the most effective resistance, is not pulling triggers of guns. It's actually triggering our consciousness into an awareness that we create our own reality. And therefore we can create a reality in which we literally think this whole conspiracy out of existence.
I agree.
Of course, if you go down the gun road, I understand it on one level, that people think we will stockpile weapons and we'll resist that way. Well, have you seen the sort of stuff they dropped on Iraq? You know, if you go down that road, then there's only one winner. If you go down the consciousness road, then you're in a stadium in which you can be governor, and you can literally change your reality to the point where, instead of having to fight
mm-hmm.
the government coming up the drive, you create a reality in which the government doesn't come up the drive. This is the difference of perception that we're moving into, and we need to move into, where we change the reality we experience through consciousness,
right.
And not through physical means, which is just an illusion anyway.
And you know, David, not only that, but look at some of the research by top scientists today, and I'm thinking of people like Bill Tiller, and here's a physicist who is proving in laboratories that mankind, with his thoughts, actually create the reality. Molecularly, we create our own reality around us by the thoughts
absolutely.
That we hold.
I mean, what's fantastic and about this period that we're in
yeah.
is that what mystics and people from ancient cultures and shaman and all these different people under different names,
mm-hmm.
that what they've been talking about for thousands of years is now being confirmed by the physicists at
sorry.
The cutting edge. And so science and spirituality are actually speaking the same language,
right.
using different words, but they're saying the same things. And of course, science and spirituality should be the same thing. And if you go back far enough, they were. This is why astrologers and astronomers we're actually the same people if you go back far enough, and so they should be. What happened is that spirituality and science were divided for specific reasons of control and deluding the people into believing in a false reality. And so because we had a manufactured science, this world is all there is, life's a bitch and then you die, and all this physical level of the scientific explanation that we've been had imposed upon us through education and the media all this time, the reason it is speaking a different language to spirituality, and the reason that it laughs and dismisses spirituality and the mystics, is because it has been speaking a false reality. That's why science has reached the point now where it has found itself in so many cul-de-sacs, so many dead ends, so many fundamental questions that it cannot even begin to answer from its perception of what is real. It's reached that point because it's been talking nonsense all this time. And what if you go to the level of the manipulation, what the science of nonsense has been manufactured to take us down a road to delude us into a false reality. What's happening now, thanks to quantum physics, is that that level of science, that cutting edge level of physics understanding, is now realizing that what the mystics have said all this time is correct, and they're now speaking the same language. This is why I keep coming across books all the time,
yeah.
which is. Quantum physicists saying, hey, the mystics were right, and this is why. So it's a wonderful, wonderful time. It's almost like, if you look at what we were talking about earlier, David, about this cycle, it's almost we're reaching a point of completion where all the different divisions that have gone off from the one unified understanding and now coming back to a unified understanding that everything is one. And there is no we, there's only one infinite I.
Well,
and therefore we all have access to that infinite I, that access to that infinite knowledge, wisdom, love, understanding. It's a wonderful time, a time of completion, a time when unity is returning.
Well,
right. And David, too, that, and then you could talk about this after I make this comment, that the forces that we're up against, and a lot of people ask me these questions, you know, how do I know what I know, and how did I learn what I learned, and how can I put time figures on this? Well, the enemy that we're up against, that David articulates so well, is that they are so ritualistic, and I'll use David's phrase, problem, reaction, solution.
Right.
They are so predictable that they are not, in essence, hiding what they're doing or their timeline and how they're doing it.
Not now they're not. I mean, it's like you said before, it's in your face. So let's go back, and I think on an intellectual basis, we and everybody listening knows this. We know where reality is, and the world around us is Maya, is an illusion. Except
absolutely, and the very symbols of our life that we look around us. And again, David is much more articulate than I am on this particular subject. But when you start to look at them in a new light with a new understanding, you have another added force for breaking the veil of deception which has been wrapped all around humanity for thousands of years.
Okay. And yet, as long as we're caught in it, somehow we have to break the illusion and break out of it or wake up into what reality is. So, let me ask you this then. What is illusion? Is the entire universe, is space an illusion? Or is it just our immediate domain where we live? What is it?
Well, Alex, let me tell you a story that happened to me which very much relates to this question.
Okay.
Wrote a book about 18 months ago called Alice in Wonderland, The World Trade Center Disaster, Why the Official Story of 9/11 is a Monumental Lie.
Yeah.
And when I was writing that, I said to my wife, you know, I've reached the point now where if I'm going to take this on I'm going to understand the next level of all this, because I've been aware all along that while I'm talking about one level, that's what it is, it's one level. There's
sure.
endless levels of this. Of course there is.
Right.
I said, I need to see some of these other dimensions beyond this one, in awareness, not in some dream, in awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to look at this world from outside and see what it really is. And at that time, having reached 50 years of age, as I was then, without taking a single magic mushroom or, I mean, I've not even smoked pot. I mean, I've not been there in any way, shape, or form. But I got an invitation to go down to the Amazon rainforest in Brazil to partake in some with a group in a week of information communication, but also taking something called ayahuasca, which is what shaman in South America have been using to
that's the mushroom, isn't it?
Levels of awareness for a long time.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was one of the big daddies of this. I mean, having you know not been in this area at all,
yeah.
But I felt too, hey, this is synchronistic. I'm going to try this and see what goes on. And it's basically a plant, which they call it a tea. You just drink it. It tastes a bit like licorice. It did to me anyway. And I could have taken it four times during the period, and I took it twice because that was enough for me. I got what I wanted. And on the first night, I went into another state of awareness and started getting information. It was all about the nature of reality and illusion. And then on the second night, I took it again, and I went into an amazing, amazing experience in full awareness. What happens is when you close your eyes, you're in a completely different reality, and then when you open your eyes, you're back in five sense reality, and it's very very interesting to compare the two. Anyway, what happened was, it's very very relevant to the question you've just asked. on the second night, I went into another world for five hours. And for 5 hours, this very clear voice, as clear as mine is now, a female voice, talked to me about the nature of reality. That was the whole thing. And when it opened up, it said, and basically the place that I went, by the way, was absolute, beyond indescribable. It was bliss. There was no fear. There was no, none of these negative emotions existed. And although I was self-aware completely,
mm-hmm.
I was also everything else that existed. There was no point where I existed and then something else existed
right.
next to me.
Yep.
It was just one unified energy field, but I was still, like I say, completely self-aware, but I was not aware of having a body. I was just consciousness.
Okay.
When this voice opened up, it was pointing out that it was going to give me the lowdown, if you like, on the nature of the illusion we live in.
Mm-hmm.
It said, the only thing you really need to remember, the only thing you really need to know is this. Infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. And in my mind, I went to say, in my mind, you mean everything. And before I got the thought out, the voice came back and said, everything.
Hmm.
No buts, no maybes, everything. And what it was saying, in more detail, is that the existence of one infinite consciousness is the only truth.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is the imagination of that consciousness in its infinite expressions of itself.
Including us.
So it was saying, and what was fascinating, and I think David alluded to it a few minutes ago, is that it told me that this universe that we live in is just a gigantic thought form. In fact, it's not even gigantic because size is an illusion. I mean, I keep
right.
telling my wife size is an illusion.
Yes. I do the same thing.
And what he was
yeah.
saying was that a pinhead and infinity are actually the same. Everything is infinite. It's just our perception of it as, oh, it's a pinhead, it's ever so small. No, that's our perception of it. Actually, it's everything that exists. It's infinity. And when I came back from Brazil, I started incessantly reading books on quantum physics to see if I could support all the stuff that I was told
right.
from that perspective as well. And I found that what the voice said in Brazil and what quantum physics is finding are absolutely the same. And I was reading a book only a few days ago which was talking about that the quantum physicists are now coming to the conclusion that the universe is just a massive thought form,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what it is. And because it's a thought form, we can change it anytime we want, once we realize we have the power to do so. So when in ancient texts it says people can move mountains, well, that's actually true, because the mountain's an illusion.
Right.
And it's where it is in your perception. You know, you can move it around because it's an illusion. Think something else. And it's understanding the power that we have to do this the foundation of this transformation this great change that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The great change is going on because our perceptions are changing, and therefore our experienced reality has to change to match our perception of reality.
Right. David, let me ask you this. Because we talk about time, we talked about how time is speeding up, and I think it is. I don't think it's because we're all older, because even kids today are saying that time just seems to be speeding. And it
my,
mentions
my
this.
My son said that the other day to me, the other day, and he's only 11. That's absolutely right.
And it says this in the Bible, that unless in the final days the days were shortened, blah, blah, blah. One of our listeners, Melody, wants to know, what is your opinion on Terence McKenna's time wave theory and the way things are speeding up?
Well, I haven't really studied that, to be honest. I don't like talking about things I don't know enough
yeah,
about.
Okay.
But one of the things that this voice said to me in Brazil was that time itself is an illusion.
Yeah.
Where I was in that period, there was no time. It's very difficult. I mean, I know people who have had out-of-body experiences have said the same. You reach, it's a point where there is no time. And it was saying that actually everything is happening in the same now.
Mm-hmm.
There is no past, present, and future, only infinite now in which everything happens. And it was telling me that part of this matrix, particularly the five-sense level of this matrix, the world we're experiencing now, is actually a time loop. That's why this new book is called Tales from the Time Loop. This thought form, this universe, has been set up to give the illusion of passing from past through present to future, because it was pointing out, and I experienced it myself at the time, this oneness, this infinite consciousness, in awareness of itself being oneness, there is no time. Everything happens in this infinite now.
Mm-hmm.
So what it was saying was to disconnect consciousness in this thought form reality, which I call the matrix, for want of a word.
Okay.
If we believe in the passage of time from past through present to future, that very perception disconnects us from the infinite oneness, which is no time. Our perception of movement through time disconnects us from a connection to no time. And it was saying that this whole matrix has been set up to give the illusion of this movement from past to future for this very reason. For instance, night and day. This voice kept asking me questions as we were going through, rhetorical questions. It was said, is there any night or day where you are now? There wasn't. Is there any time where you are now? No, there wasn't.
Yeah.
He said, do you think the infinite consciousness ages? Do you think the infinite oneness draws a pension? Do you think it gets older? No. So why do you? Because it is an illusion. And one of the greatest illusions that holds us in this illusion of passing from past to future,
mm-hmm,
is the aging of the physical body. Now, what it was saying very clearly, which is exactly what physicists are coming to the conclusion of now, is that everything in this realm is a holographic illusion, a hologram. If you look at a hologram, it appears to be three-dimensional,
right,
and it appears to occupy space, but it doesn't. You put your hand through it. It looks solid, the best of them do, but you put your hand through them and you realize it's not solid. This is what the human physical body is.
Right.
And it was saying to me, if you have a hologram of a human body, like a holographic picture,
mm-hmm,
does it age? Yeah. No. As long as those lasers are working,
right,
and then the hologram doesn't change in terms of how it's created, then that physical body, that picture of a physical body, will stay in that state infinitely.
That's right.
Why then, it said, does the hologram of human physical bodies, why does it go through this process of aging and dying?
Yeah.
Because it is programmed to do that. It's like it was saying that the physical body is like a software program, and it has been programmed to go through this cycle of birth to death. And nothing implants this belief in going from past to future more than looking in the mirror and see yourself aging and seeing people around you aging. And once we buy that past to present time illusion, we disconnect from no time, which is the infinite oneness that we really are. We basically, what it was saying was, everything is the same consciousness, but the difference is that which is aware that it is infinite oneness,
right,
and that is which is caught in the illusion that it is not, and the illusion of duality, the illusion of polarity, the illusion of division rather than unity, which is what this matrix has created. It's created this illusion of division and rejecting the fact that everything is unified. And because of that, that which perceives itself to be division and duality disconnects from a connection with that which is aware of its unity. Again, it's all about disconnecting us from
sure.
the level that we really are, which is infinite unified oneness. So we get caught in this illusion of the Matrix, which is there to entrap us in the illusion of who we are.
Then, David, then, how do we go about waking people up? I mean,
well, I think two things are happening. First of all, as we discussed, this cycle is starting to trigger people.
Yes.
Also, the key is information, which is a massive trigger for people, not least because beyond the conscious level, we are already aware of this. It's at the conscious level that we overwhelmingly get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And so information can trigger memory, which starts to then, from within the person, bring out this knowledge that's already there, which is why people, once that trigger has happened, can change their perception dramatically quickly. Basically, it's like, you know, where you're talking to someone, and they'll say, hey, do you remember that time we went to Venice Beach in Los Angeles
mm-hmm.
And so-and-so happened? And you go, no, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
No, you do. I tell you why. We met Bill there. You know Bill? Bill, we met him there. No, I don't remember that. You remember that guy tried on the roller skates and fell over? Oh, yes. Now, the moment that trigger has triggered the memory, suddenly the person who even couldn't remember the event is now pouring out, and so-and-so happened, and all the details coming out.
Right.
Now, symbolically, information can trigger that, and once it does, out of the person comes this deep memory and knowledge that is actually true. And so communicating information, programs like this, et cetera, are absolutely vital because of this this process of triggering people to remember who they really are. It's not a case of people learning something new. It's remembering what they already know, i.e. your infinite oneness and have infinite power.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is why they have suppressed this knowledge for so long. It's because it's fundamental to controlling the people, to hold them in the illusion. It's to keep away from them knowledge that would wake them up. So that's very, very important that people communicate and do not fear saying things that are at odds with the prevailing reality. Don't fear the consequences of ridicule or condemnation. They just speak them. Because one thing I've learned over the years is people can't unhear something. They might laugh at it to start with. I've had all that. But then events in the world happen, and people go, well, hold on a minute, that's what that bloke said. And this is why people can't unhear something. Even if it's rejected initially, it's still gone in there, and it will eventually affect people with the passage of events.
Now,
one thing, Alex, too, that, and that right before your break here, that this is not easy for people like David and I either. Just like David, we get, pretty much assaulted, on a daily basis for doing what we do in trying to wake people up in telling them the truth.
Mm-hmm. I understand. When we get back, I want to present an interesting thought and see how we can work out of it. So relax a little bit. We got about 7 minutes, guys, and I will be right back. And everybody, we are listening tonight or talking with David Icke and David Booth. Yes, I'm still here. Don't worry. And you are listening to Mysteries of the Mind on the Millennium Radio Network, and we will be right back. But Fintan Dunn has some wonderful news, so interesting news, too. Stay where you are, and we will be right back.
This is the Millennium Radio Network. And you're on the inside track on world news for Thursday, the 19th of February, 2004.
sponsored by neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. Coming up later in this bulletin, one distraught father reacts to news that the CDC lied about the link between vaccines and his son's autism.
I have to live with the memory of my child's cries and knowing that each vaccination that we gave him that I held him down for was injuring him.
But first, either John Kerry or John Edwards would trounce President Bush in an election, says a Gallup poll just released. Kerry, the Democratic frontrunner, would beat Bush by 55-43%. Edwards would win by 54-44. The collapse in Bush support has been dramatic and fast. In early February, Bush was level with both Kerry and Edwards. The poll results throw Karl Rove's re-election strategy into disarray. He hadn't planned to defrost Obama until later this year, but the slide in Bush support must be halted, as it was late last year when Saddam Hussein saved the Bush dinosaur from electoral extinction. So, in a completely unrelated development, General Richard Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said today that the US is intensifying efforts to capture Osama bin Laden, who's reputed to be hiding out on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. The top US general said US intelligence agencies have spent an enormous amount of time on the effort. I believe him. After all, look at the spade work it took to dig that spider hole for the Saddam double. Lieutenant General David Barno, commander of US forces in Afghanistan, is already expecting to capture Osama soon. Just pull the plug on that freezer and give him a couple of weeks to thaw. He'll look as good as he did the day he died in the Saudi hospital back before 9/11. In another completely unrelated development to Bush's poll problems, the Election Assistance Commission is to speed up allocation of $2.3 billion in federal funds to buy new electronic voting systems. DeForest Sorries, the commission's chairman, said the funds will be dispersed about mid-May. The British government, meanwhile, is to give permission for the first commercial cultivation of a genetically modified crop, despite 80% of Britons being opposed to GM crops and just 2% prepared to eat them. Former colleague of Tony Blair, ex-Environment Minister Michael Meacher, accused Blair of caving into pressure from the US government and the multinational biotech companies. Now, a special report in association with Cathy McMahon of neemwell.com. The truth is out. Mercury in vaccines causes developmental problems in children. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control has known since the year 2000. They lied and used staged studies to hide the truth, and we have the proof from internal CDC discussions. Today, the official CDC line is still that vaccines are safe. On their website and in their publications, the CDC says exactly what most vaccine manufacturers say.
That there is no scientific data supporting any link between developmental delay in autism and our vaccines at this point.
At this point, that's a lie constructed in secret by the CDC and the vaccine makers. In February 2000, a CDC study found significant links between mercury in vaccines and autism in children. The CDC, the FDA and manufacturers met in June 2000 to figure out what to do. NBC affiliate First Coast News used the Freedom of Information Act to get hold of a transcript of that secret meeting. It details the reactions of those at the meeting to seeing clear proof of the damage caused by vaccines. It included comments like, "We've got a serious problem." Another comment, "It worries me. I don't want my grandson to get thimerosal-containing vaccine until we know better what's going on." Finally, the meeting concluded with the words, "We have asked you to keep this information confidential." And that's what happened. The CDC buried the study and said nothing for 3 years. Then, late last year, they selectively extracted information from the February study, 2000, and published a new study contradicting the earlier results and clearing mercury vaccines of any link to neurological problems in children. 5-year-old Ryan Anderson of Jacksonville Beach is now recovering from autism-type developmental problems, which began right after he received the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, says Ryan's father, Bruce Anderson. Had the CDC spoken in 2000, Ryan would have not been made ill. It's a realization that eats away at his father, Bruce.
I have to live with the memory of my child's cries and knowing that each vaccination that we gave him that I held him down for was injuring him.
Ryan's improving now because his doctor knows what the CDC won't admit. Dr. Jeff Bradstreet of Melbourne has documented how some children are unable to cope with the harmful effects of mercury.
There are children who don't detox heavy metals well because of a defect genetically. The more mercury that we expose them to, the more problems they're going to have.
And that's the inside track on mercury vaccines. Some children cannot handle them, and I'm sure there's going to be legal repercussions to that information coming out. Thanks to Kathy of Neamwell.com for that. If you'd like a copy of the special report on that, including extracts of those audio clips and video, just email Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, at Neamwell.com with subscribe in the subject line, and she'll send those out to you. Now, it's not Planet X, but it's the largest non-planetary body in our solar system. A new planetoid has been discovered in an orbit beyond Neptune's. The chunk of ice and rock is about 1,000 miles in diameter, almost as big as the planet Pluto, taking 300 years to go around the Sun. It's the second body discovered in the area. Back in 2002, a smaller planetoid called Quawar was discovered. And Mel Gibson's father just won't stay shut up. He's back on air, repeating his claim that the Holocaust was exaggerated. Hudson Gibson was interviewed on Speak Your Peace, NYWFNR Radio, and the mouthy old cuss did just that. He spoke his piece, arguing that the Holocaust was maybe not all fiction, but most of it is. The 85-year-old was only warming up. He went on to tell host Steve Fernstein that Jews were out to create one world religion and one world government, which involves Jewish bankers, the U.S. Federal Reserve, and the Vatican, among others. You're getting close there, guy. Keep it up. Drudge Report should be named Sludge Report after those exclusive stories about John Kerry's intern didn't pan out. But I wonder, will Sludge be as quick to pick up this story about conservative moralizer William Bennett, who comes down hard on those who don't measure up to his high standards? But is there a leather-bound dominatrix bodybuilder in Las Vegas who comes down rather hard on William Bennett? What story is that, you ask? None. There's no such story yet. And finally this evening, we're in a position to exclusively reveal, as a result of those falling poll numbers for President Bush, that Karl Rove has now selected a new theme song for Bush 2004. Yeah, we know. That's a good idea, George. I think you should. And close the door on your way out. Then we'll get on to dealing with Kerry, the other bonesmen, and whatever else the NWO has in store. That's the problem. They've got 57 varieties of George W. Bush to serve up to you. And that's the inside track. This has been Fintan Dunn reporting. Details are on Mysteries of the Mind. Just click on Latest News. Or you'll also find your link to the chat room if you want to join in during the show and discuss with others or even put questions to Alex's guest. And speaking of Alex, here he is, the man who put the icon back in iconoclastic, the one and only Alex Merklinger.
Alex Merklinger's Mysteries of the Mind. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Radio signal from another world.
The physical, the mental, the spiritual. The answers to health, happiness, and life.
Trying to free your mind, but I can only show you the door.
You're the one that has to walk through.
And now your host, Alex Merklinger.
And my friends, again, welcome back. Welcome to Mysteries of the Mind. Most interesting show tonight. I know they all are, but this is fun because this is something that I have spent most of my life studying, contemplating, and talking about in the different classes that I have taught and on a lot of shows. And we have with us two, I would say, of the world experts. We have David Icke and David Booth. And gentlemen, again, welcome back to another segment of Mysteries of the Mind, and very, very interesting tonight. We are waking a lot of people up. So, David Icke, I hope you're waking up a little more now over in the motherland.
Yeah, I am. It's 4:10 in the morning here. I'm always up this early.
Okay. So
one of the interesting things, Alex, is going on from talking about waking up and going on from what we were talking about before about how do people wake up. One phenomenon that's very clearly happening is what's become known as this 100th monkey syndrome.
Yep.
For people who haven't come across that, it's the finding that once a certain number of a species learns something new, many, if not all of that species suddenly can inexplicably, though it's not really inexplicable, can do it without being shown, without having to learn it. It just knows.
Sure.
And it's a phenomena that involves something that Carl Jung called the collective unconscious, the
right.
Collective mind, or what I call consensus reality. It's that level that we are all connected as a species. And I always see it as that collective mind is like the internet, the World Wide Web. And we as, quote, individual minds are like computers connected to that web. And so what the computers believe, we as individuals, is being passed into the web, into the collective mind all the time. And so that becomes the reality of the collective mind. And the collective mind is communicating with us, and we're communicating with that all the time, because it's actually one whole. And so whatever is the prevailing belief of people is the prevailing belief of the collective mind. And so what happens with the 100th monkey syndrome is there comes a point where enough of the computers, if you like, have learned something new and passed that into the collective level for it to be powerful enough at the collective level for all the other members of that species to have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly they are spontaneously knowing something that they haven't been told and learned, because they're accessing that from the collective level.
That's right.
And because animals don't watch CNN or CBS, and they don't go through the education system that de-educates them, they're obviously more sensitive to this process of connection than humans. But humans are very much connected in this way also. And so when people ask the question, well, what can I do? Well, just by coming to another perception, you are passing that information into the collective level. And we're moving towards this critical mass point where this new awareness or remembered awareness is so powerful within the collective that the 100th monkey syndrome kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly everyone in the species is accessing this new awareness and knowing it without actually having to read a book or listen to a radio discussion. And this is the level where the real transformation is going on. And I don't know about David and others, but I'm coming across people all the time, including
sure.
some people this week, who spontaneously, just almost in an instant, sort of saw the world in a different way and didn't know why. They hadn't read a book or heard anything. They just knew. And this is the 100th monkey syndrome phenomenon kicking in. And this is going to really, really expand through this period
yeah.
to 2012. And this is we're going to be amazed a few years from now how many have woken up in the period that we're going to go through.
I think
right,
also...
Right, we're starting to see some concrete examples of that too, Alec, in that today, for the first time, and I did a Nexus search on this too,
yep.
the Washington Post came out with a story called Ike and the Aliens, a story about that 50 years ago on the 20th of February, that there were alleged stories of Eisenhower meeting with the
sure.
aliens.
That's right.
His administration said, of course, that he went to a mm-hmm. dentist that night, woke up in the middle of the night and went to a dentist.
That's when he had his heart attack.
Well, the AP came out with a story that that they put that Eisenhower died and retracted it 2 minutes later. But here's what's interesting, and this ties in with what David just said,
yep.
is that the credibility of the mass media, the major media sources, is weakening. The programs like yours are on the ascendancy. For the first time in 15 years, and I did a Nexus search on this,
okay.
that the story today that the Washington Post published was the first story that they did with a UFO in it in 15 years. In
really?
15 years. Why now?
Yeah.
Because they're losing credibility.
Here's an interesting, I think, way or look at what we are talking about. We all understand, and we've been talking about it all tonight, and that is that the world around us is illusion, that each of us creates our own reality. We have an interaction with each other. Carl Jung talked about the collective consciousness. When all of a sudden we realize who we are not individuals, but we are a fragment, just like David Icke, you said, we're a fragment of the whole, of the total consciousness of the Creator, not of the universe, because that consciousness is the one that created the universes that we are surrounded by. When humanity, or us individually, realize that we are part of the whole, that this physical body, this physical reality, is only an illusion, then I think the biggest step that we have to take comes into play, and that is the surrender of our ego. And if we can surrender the ego, that's when total enlightenment will come upon us. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I would say that we're not just a fragment of the whole, we are the whole. Just as every droplet of water in an ocean is also the ocean, the
mm-hmm.
pinhead is infinity. So, you know, we are the infinite, as well as appearing to be the pinhead.
But we still have to give up our ego.
Well, we have to give up our belief in the reality that we are told is real throughout our lives.
Okay.
You can still express yourself as an individual expression of the whole while still being aware that you're the whole. I mean, the infinite is not just one a blob of personality. It is has infinite possibility, therefore expresses itself in infinite ways. Each of us is expressing that infinity in a different way, what we call a personality. I don't see anything wrong with having a personality, an individual expression within the whole. It's understanding that we are the whole at the same time. It's like when I was in that state in Brazil, like I mentioned earlier, I was everything. Everything was everything, but I was still self-aware as an individual, unique expression of that. But it's giving up our belief system that will free us. Because when you think about it, what are miracles? Miracles are merely a person's ability to disconnect from a belief in the limitations of this world.
Right.
This is why people can walk through fire without getting burned. This is why people at an extreme level can actually demanifest. I had an acquaintance here on this island where I live, on the south coast of England, who used to put a room in her house. She used to give it over for people who wanted to meditate for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me a story that this one guy came along and he was meditating for days and days and days and days. And eventually she got word about him and she took him a cup of tea. And she said she quietly opened the door and looked inside. And the next thing she did was drop the tea. Because when she looked at the guy, the top half of his body was still visible, but the bottom half of his body, he was sitting on the floor, was no longer there.
Yeah.
That would appear to be impossible, but all that's happened is that the consciousness has moved to another realm, and the body, which is just an expression of his consciousness, has actually started to move with him. And so what he's done is overcome the limitations in belief of the physical laws of this reality, which are only illusions. So once we can disconnect our belief, and if you analyze it, the belief that we're given is from cradle to grave is a belief in limitation. You
right.
can't. Then we can create our reality and do amazing things because we disconnect from that sense of limitation. But we can still be self-aware personalities.
expressing a unique part of the infinite whole.
I agree. And once a person reaches that level of development, it's not even understanding development, then we have an ability, and every single person has it, of functioning on many different planes at one time. And I think
between them,
And I think this is one of the things that's going to happen in 2012 is all of a sudden we are going to realize that through our minds we have created our own limitations in this three-dimensional world, and that as soon as we agree to release it or shed this shell that we're in, then we literally will be going on to a higher realm. And the higher we go, the more we will shed all of our physical niceties. And I'm remembering an experience that a friend of mine had. He was a full-blooded Aztec Indian out of Mexico City, but he was staying with my partner up in Connecticut, and he had an experience where a ball of light came to him one night. And as he is telling me, the tears are rolling down his face, and he said it was the most beautiful experience he had ever had in his life, and it was like a musical sound was coming out of it, and the words were being given to him telepathically. And his comment was, "Are you God?" And the answer was, "No, but I am what you would call God," meaning that even that being, entity, was so far advanced from where we are in our physical realm that we can't even have a concept of what it was or what God is.
Mm-hmm.
Because mankind with a finite mind is incapable of even conceiving of the infinite. So we have a lot of space to cover.
Yeah, but they can be covered very, very quickly. Going back to what I said earlier about not remembering the trip to Venice Beach, and then once the memory is triggered of the event, suddenly you remember all the detail as well. It can happen very quickly. It's not that we have to find our way back to oneness.
Mm-hmm.
It's that we are already oneness. We have to remove the barriers we throw up between ourselves and oneness, what we are, and that is belief in duality, division, limitation. If once we break that belief, that stranglehold on our perception, then we already are where we want to go.
Yep, right.
It's not that we have to get there; it's that we have to break the barrier between us and where we already are.
Mm-hmm.
What this voice in Brazil was saying was that, like I mentioned earlier, it's not that we are divided from oneness in the realm that we're existing in, perceiving this matrix. It's and oneness is oneness, and we're not oneness. The difference is perception, that oneness in awareness of itself, and oneness that's not in awareness of itself. And what it said was, it's like, imagine a whirlpool in a river.
Yeah.
The whirlpool is still part of the river.
Right.
But it is it's a self-contained world. And as long as the water keeps flowing in that area at the same in the same way, that whirlpool, that eddy, will actually continue indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
And what is holding this eddy, this whirlpool together, this vortex, because that's what this voice said that this matrix really was, it's a vortex. What's holding this vortex together is the belief in the world that the vortex expresses. And as long as we go on believing in it, believing what we're told about reality, then in effect the whirlpool in the river will go on spinning. It's still part of the river,
right.
Just not aware that it is. And so once we break this belief in the world that we live in, and we realize that it's an illusion that our minds are creating, then the circumstances that keep the whirlpool spinning in the river change, and we get absorbed back into the river again, and in awareness that we are the river and not just an isolated whirlpool, if you like.
Well, now,
it's this belief that is holding us in this, in the headlights of an oncoming train. That's the belief that's holding
sure.
us. That's why, Alex, that this whole conspiracy spends so much time
and effort
controlling the information we receive, so it mm-hmm. keeps implanting the belief that holds the matrix together.
Right, well, and Alex, that runs through not only our political establishment, but also our educational and science institutions.
Absolutely.
Just a quick example here,
mm-hmm.
And I devoted a whole chapter of this in my book. We hear a lot about DNA and the marvelous things that they've discovered.
Right.
What a lot of people don't realize is that the discoveries made in U.S. institutions, scientific establishments, universities, etc., only deals with 5% of the DNA. American science,
right.
quote-unquote, claims that 95% of the DNA is junk. Well, the Russian Academy of Sciences in St. Petersburg have been doing phenomenal research on that DNA and tying in with what David said before about remembering.
You mean the junk DNA.
Right, the junk
yeah,
DNA.
Right. Yeah.
And what they're discovering is that there are DNA, this junk DNA, there are aspects of it that are actually activated by words. That they've seen the changes that are actually activated by words. And that ties into something going back to the Bible, where Jesus had said, the smallest seed is a mustard seed, but when it's planted, he said it grows into the largest herb. And he says, and he gave that as an analogy, as a parable of what words are.
Mm-hmm.
And people like myself, David Icke, and others, so many others around the world that are doing our small parts in trying to wake people up, we realize that it doesn't take a lot. And like that example that David gave, do you remember Mike Smith? Oh, no, I don't remember him. The guy that, fell over, when we were in high school. Oh, yeah. But this is what is happening in the world today. More and more of these words are reaching more and more people. And the more people they reach, the more people are triggering these memories inside of them.
Yeah.
That go back thousands of years, and as they're finding out in Russia right now, the scientists are finding out right now, there is actually a basis for that.
Oh,
absolutely. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah. Now,
going on from that, in confirming that in a reverse way, one of the things that I've been looking at and coming across in the last year or so are people who study language. And they study words that are used in officialdom, in documents, and the words of the system, if you like, and the way things are worded and what have you. And they've taken the kind of origin back through the centuries and discovered what those words really mean.
Right.
When you see the great detail these people go into, that these words and phrases that are used by the system are not ad hoc, they're not random, they are very, very carefully orchestrated.
Absolutely.
Because of the understanding that the Illuminati have
mm-hmm.
of the power of language, because it is a vibration. I'm talking now, every word I speak,
right.
I'm sending a vibration out. And they are vibrational codes, that's what words are. And they use them in a way that is designed to affect us on a conscious and subconscious level in ways that we don't consciously realize.
Yeah.
And in the same way, as David said, if you use words in another way, you can trigger things that these other use of words are designed to suppress.
Yeah.
Language is very, very important, the language that we use. And also an interesting thing I came across in my research, Alex, is this story in the Bible of the Tower of Babel and how the people were scattered and given different languages.
Mm-hmm.
That story, that basic story, can be found all over the world.
Sure.
Of the time when people were given different languages to divide them. And of course, people like myself who communicate around the world understand the difficulties that has actually created in terms of communicating. And when I talked to Credo Mutwa, the Zulu shaman and official historian of the Zulu nation, he told me about the fact that the Zulus and the black African going way back into history has exactly the same story. And what he's saying, and what I've heard from other people, and I have great support for this view, is that if you go back far enough, we didn't actually use words. We communicated telepathically, if you go back far enough. And that, of course, language has tremendous limitations. I mean, when we're getting into this whole area of reality and the nature of reality, what you want to express from the inner knowing cannot be expressed in its full magnitude by human words, that you can only get as close as you can with words. It's just a knowing that doesn't need words. You just know. But expressing that in words can be very, very difficult, and like I say, you can only get as close as you can. So going from telepathy, which is the communication of knowing without words, was a part of the suppression. So we moved to human language. And what is human language? It's using words which are, if you like, communication within this realm of reality. That's where we're communicating. When we communicated telepathically, and when we still do, because we can,
that's right.
We're communicating on another level of our consciousness, and I guess it's like a muscle. If you use it, then this level of our consciousness that we use when we telepathically communicate, you're using the muscle, and therefore it gets more and more stronger and what have you, and becomes more and more powerful. Whereas if you don't use it, it goes to sleep. And So language is very important in terms of what I've talked about. The words they use are very important because of the vibrations they send out and the way that affects the DNA and us in many levels. But the real level of communication is even beyond that. It's just communicating on a level of thought, and that's the level that we're going to move into.
And we will, you betcha.
Now, which they wish to suppress and hold us in the five senses by maintaining communication only through words.
Yeah, just today when my wife and I were driving, we were talking about this exact thing, and I was trying to explain to her that Nazi Germany used, they were very, very smart, and I'm sure they weren't the first ones, to take words that meant one thing millennia ago and seemingly change the meaning of them so that when people in present time use them, they think it means something, one thing in this present time, but their subconscious mind, their genetic memory, remembers what it was way, way back in the beginning. And I said, here's a perfect example, and I don't want to offend anybody, but here's the reality. Every time I hear somebody, and I have a friend of mine who's a homosexual, and he always wanted me to adjust his neck because I've always worked with people kind of as a healer since I was 4 years old. And one day I was having lunch, and he came over and he sat down. What happened came out, and I didn't even realize where it came from. And he said, "You know I'm gay." And I looked up at him, and I said, "No, Stephen, you're a fag." I said, "Gay means happy." I said, "No, you may be a happy fag, but you're still a fag." And he looked at, he got the biggest, this was a doctor, by the way, a doctor from Stanford University. He got the biggest smile on his face, and he said, "Nobody else has ever had the guts to say that to me." Now, that's an example of what has been going on in our societies today, just in that one realm, because when all of us, I mean, David Icke, you're still a young kid, but you're catching up to David Booth and me, right, David? And do you remember when we were young, the term gay meant happy?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And now it has changed, and it's a very insidious process where we have been told by a certain element in all of our societies that if you are a homosexual, you're happy, so that other people should really be as happy because they should also be homosexuals. And that's where this whole concept of calling homosexual people gay came from. That's a planned process.
Well, this is a very interesting and I think important area of discussion, because one of the things I go into in Tales from the Time Loop is political correctness, mm-hmm. and what George Orwell called in his book 1984, which was so prophetic, newspeak.
Right.
And he talked about newspeak and oldspeak,
uh-huh.
Changing the language to appear to say one thing while saying another. And there's no better example of that, of course, than free trade. Free trade, if you're against free trade, then it's a bad thing to be against free trade. But what free trade really is, of course, is anything but free trade. Just as capitalism isn't capitalism at all, it's cartelism. And so getting people on a less than poverty wage to make your products in Indonesia for a few cents and then bring them across the world, and with no trade barriers, free trade,
sure.
You're able to sell them for vast, enormous, grotesque, unbelievable levels of profit in
right.
America or Europe.
Yeah.
That is called free trade, and to be against it is bad, because who will be against something that's free? Who's against freedom? You can't be against freedom. And this is the way it works. And one of the things that Orwell was pointing out, and we're seeing this, is that if you remove the number of words that you can use, you don't only remove the ability of people to express verbally what they are wishing to say and what they're wishing to communicate. Because at this level, we actually think in words also. I mean, try to have a thought at the level of the five-sense world that we live in without actually that thought manifesting itself in words.
That's right.
You can go to a higher level, like we were talking about earlier, where you just know, but most people, and most of us most of the time, are thinking in words. He was pointing out that if you remove the number of words in circulation, you're also removing the ability of people as generations pass to actually articulate their own thoughts, because the words don't exist to articulate them in their own mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And what we're seeing with political correctness is more and more words being taken out of circulation because it is wrong through various means that are manufactured to actually use those words.
Right.
And we're reaching the point where it is absolutely ludicrous. I was reading a book about political correctness in American schools where one book was rejected as being able to be used in California, so this book was saying, because it was talking about dolphins, and they said this would be offensive to children who didn't live by the water. I mean, this is the level we're getting to now is absolutely extraordinary. And on the level, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, the people in uniform who carry out the agenda without realizing it, at the level where these political correctness nonsenses are imposed, they're just people who really just need to get a life. But when you go to the level where this is orchestrated from, there is method in this apparent madness, and it is to suppress the number of words and the number of things we can actually say.
Right.
And that then imprisons us even more.
Yep.
In the agenda's version of reality.
Hmm.
Right, and this ties in to what we were talking about, too, again, about language, about words, about the
sure.
power of words to awaken memories in people. And the agenda that the hidden government, hidden powers that be, whatever you want to call them, have had in knowing the time period we were entering in right now, have made sure that there is a substantial number of children, young adults, college students today,
yep.
that don't have functional reading habits.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at... Most of them come from a background that David and I have, and that's athletics. My gosh, we didn't have to know anything, because if you were an athlete, all they wanted you to do was to perform.
Now, yeah, and it's the same. It's the same with the military.
Yeah.
And all these areas, they don't want people to think for themselves. That's the worst nightmare of any dictator.
Yeah,
you need
right.
people to think only the way that the agenda of the dictator desires them to think, so the agenda can unfold.
Right.
And when we
we hear this phrase, the dumbing down of education. It's exactly what the agenda requires, because informed thinking, free thinking people are the worst nightmare of any dictatorship.
Sure.
So you want the opposite. And, you know, I've said before that if you sat down around a table and you said, now look, for this agenda to work, we have got to get control of the children so that we can turn out the adults that see the world in the way we need them to see it. Now, how can we do this? Any ideas? And someone would say, well, you know, I don't know if the people would have this, but you know the perfect thing that would really make this happen? What we need to do is have a system where we get control of what the children are taught from the age of about 4 and 5, no later.
Right.
And we have control of what they are taught at 4 or 5, 6 days a week, right through their formative years, right through to their late teens and 20s. And then, if we had that, then we would turn out adults overwhelmingly who saw the world the way they wanted to see them. And of course, what I've just described is the education system, which is exactly what we don't have.
Right.
I was a rebel at school. I guess I've been a rebel since I left the womb, but I went to school only to play for the soccer team and you know, see my mates. I mean, what they taught me, I had this instinctive, I don't know where it came from, this instinctive feeling all through my school years that, you know, I didn't really need to know this, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't impressed that it had anything to offer me. And I left school at 15 and went to play soccer, professional soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have not had to go through an unlearning process quite as much as most people, because I wasn't indoctrinated quite as much, because I spent most of my school life looking out the window or standing in the corridor because I was looking out the window. You know, I had a great life at school in terms of education. And when I went around, when I first started talking about this in the early 90s, I went around universities. I was talking at the Oxford Union and the Cambridge Union and talking to university students around the country. And, you know, coming from that educational background, when I went out there, I thought, you know, I'm going to be asked some challenging questions here. You know, this is going to be a real challenge. I went through literally a stream of British universities in the early 90s, and I was not asked one challenging question. And I was staggered at how people of 17, 18, 19 were already indoctrinated into a version of reality that was imprisoning them from seeing anything beyond it.
Right.
So to get the children first is fundamental, because then you turn out the adults you want. And this is why they bombard. I mean, I feel for kids today. I mean, you know, we went through indoctrination as kids, but what they're getting today is absolutely staggering. Not only that, there are all the additives in the food that are designed to affect the chemistry of the brain, therefore affect their ability to think.
Yep.
It's all orchestrated. And one of the things I say to people is, all over the world there are those that are challenging additives in food. They're challenging the effect of vaccines. They're challenging the banking system, and it's ludicrous, the ludicrous scam of money that doesn't exist. They're challenging the invasion of Iraq. They're challenging this. They're challenging the environmental stuff. What we need to realize is that all these groups challenging these different impositions and injustices are challenging the same people.
That's right.
And it's orchestrated on many, many levels. So to get the children as indoctrinated and unthinking as you need them to be, you don't only attack them verbally through the education system, you attack their minds chemically through food additives, through fluoride and all this other stuff, aspartame. So you have a multi-level attack. And this is another thing, the very fact, Alex, that so many people are waking up despite this bombardment of pressure not to shows the true power of human consciousness and once we start to access it and use it.
Right.
And basically, this imposition, while when you look at it on a physical, intellectual level, it looks all-powerful, it's actually, once we get control of our consciousness back, like knocking a fly off your wrist.
Yep.
But only when we get our consciousness back and can get control of it again.
And when it comes to children, Alex, too, the antithesis of the children that we have today, I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with this, but a few hundred years ago, there was a case, the wild boy from Avignon in France.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a young boy who was found. He was raised by animals.
Mm-hmm.
When
wolves,
he was brought into the institutions,
yep.
They made a very concentrated effort to modernize him. But some of the incredible things that he did, and I'll just give one example for brevity's sake here, is he went into the kitchen one day where the cooks had a large kettle where they were boiling apples in.
Right.
He wanted an apple. He reached into the boiling water and got an apple. They were stunned because he would have been burnt. There was no burns on him.
Right.
Why? He didn't know that boiling water could burn him.
That's right. Yeah.
He wasn't taught that.
And he had nothing to identify that experience with.
Absolutely.
And it's just
like, an apple. He knew apple. Sure. He knew water. He reached in and got his apple.
Well, it's like David talked about before. I mean, we can learn how to walk on hot coals.
You
very easily.
That scene in the first Matrix movie where the Neo character goes in to see the lady called the Oracle.
Yeah.
And she says, don't worry about the vase. And he said, what vase? And the vase falls off the table and smashes.
Right.
And he said, he said, you know, how did that happen? What happened? Or was that effect? And she said, what's really going to cook your noodle is, would it have happened if I hadn't told you?
Yeah, right.
You know, the story that David just told is so relevant to this whole way that we are indoctrinated with a belief in reality, and therefore that is the reality we experience.
Right, right.
You know, nobody told me I couldn't jump that far.
Yeah.
No, you can't jump that far because the Olympic record, the world record, is so and so.
That's right.
So you can't, you know, you can't jump further than the world champion, can you? Well, who says?
And it's been done all the time.
I can't.
Sure.
Then that becomes my reality. I can't. That's interesting. Point actually, going on the sporting level of this. I played football once for a team called Coventry City in a match against Oxford University at a sports ground called Iffley Road, I think it was called. And around that football pitch was the track on which the first 4 minute mile was run. Was it Roger Bannister?
Yep.
And what was interesting is that once Bannister had run a 4 minute mile, just a split second inside it,
yep.
And showed it was possible, suddenly other people started doing 4 minute miles.
Right.
Because the barrier of belief, 4 minute miles not possible, can a human run 4 minutes? Oh no, I don't think so.
Right.
That had been lost because someone had done it, and suddenly other people did it because the mental barrier was gone. And it's the same with all these kind of sporting limitations. Once someone's done it, loads of people start to do the same, and it's all in the mind, not the body.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Absolutely.
And we live in a world today, too, Alex, that the listeners that are listening right now, that there are so many out there that have incredible talents, that have incredible abilities, that are living in this time to do incredible and marvelous things,
mm-hmm.
yet they are waiting for something to happen because they won't allow themselves to believe it.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Because if people realize, and maybe we can just talk for a second because we're running out of time already, if people could realize that the only limitations are those that we accept or place on ourselves, and simply by the realization that they don't exist, then we become superhuman beings. And yet we are already those superhuman beings. Now,
excellent point, Alex.
Yeah,
that is the point. It's not that we have to learn to be what we call superhuman. We already are. We have
right.
to remember that. And the Illuminati for this agenda to continue have to keep us in the illusion that we are beings of severe limitation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was reading a story. I'm going out there talking away. I hope to meet some of these people in June. They're kind of the Hawaiian version of the Shaman. shaman, the kahuna, and this man was describing how he watched them walk across volcanic rock that was had only cooled enough to take their weight, and they did it with bare feet, without any burning on their feet at all.
Right.
And they then said to him, you know, you do it. And he insisted on keeping his shoes on. I don't know what that was supposed to have helped him.
Yeah.
But what they did was they went into this meditative state, which was to disconnect themselves from the sense of reality of this world, if you like.
Yeah.
And he was taken into this meditative state with them. And he also walked across the coals, the volcanic rock then. And the only thing that burned was the rubber of his soles. His feet didn't. And this is the whole basis of miracles. It's not miracles. It's disconnecting sense of limitation,
right.
Your sense of limitation, and going into a sense of limitless possibility, and therefore your reality corresponds then to limitless possibility instead of limitation. It's just all going on in the mind, and so the whole basis of the conspiracy is the manipulation of our sense of reality. It's
absolutely
a mind game, and that's why they absolutely have worked to control the mainstream media, because the television in the corner of the room is the hypnotist in the stage show. It's implanting a belief constantly so that that's what we experience.
And within 15 minutes of viewing a television, you actually, you know, your body sets up a sympathetic relationship with it via vibrations.
Right.
Uh-huh. And also, I was reading some research as well, that when you're actually sitting watching a television, you go into a similar mental state
mm-hmm.
as you do in a hypnotic state. And what's interesting, I was watching a video some years ago of a man who was studying advertising. He was studying the words they use in advertising, and he showed endless examples in this video of the use of words like dream, imagination,
mm-hmm.
and words to that effect, which are designed to take people into this hypnotic kind of state, which allows them to then feed the advertisement's message into the subconscious mind, which then eventually comes into the conscious mind as a thought, which is, oh, I need to buy that product. And so this is, again, even through advertising, we're being manipulated subliminally to take the message on a subconscious level, which eventually becomes the conscious level as a thought and an action.
That's right.
And this is used in political advertising and the advertising of the sense of reality. It's happening all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. David, what can you foresee, and I'm going to change, you know, course a little bit. What do you foresee happening in the next 6 to 8 months with this election that we're having? Do you think that, let's just say, the powers that be, are they going to pull another 9/11 stunt?
I think that the point is, Alex, that when you see what their agenda is, they have reached a point now of credibility with Iraq and the lack of weapons of mass destruction, and the very obvious situation is that
sure.
they made it all up, not because of bad intelligence. They made it up on purpose because they needed an excuse to go into Iraq, which, as I show and other people have shown in my books, that they had long planned to do so. So the credibility problem with the people is now increasingly massive. I mean, we've just had a major opinion poll in Britain that shows that more than half of the British people think Blair is dishonest and not telling the truth. It's very, very rare to meet someone in Britain now that believes Tony Blair is telling the truth any time, and they're right. I mean, you know when Tony Blair's lying because his lips are moving, says George Bush. But
yeah.
And so what they're going to need to push this on are other things like 9/11, probably chemical attacks, which are going to create the fear that is necessary to justify the further expansion of this agenda of global conquest and control. So
sure.
I very, very surprised if we don't see more of that in the period ahead. I remember the guy, what's his name, Tommy Franks, who was involved, he was controlling
The general.
The invasion of Iraq from outside of Iraq. And he said in a speech a few weeks ago that if there was a chemical attack in America, they would have to go to a military government. And this is the problem, reaction, solution. Create the problem, get the reaction, do something, offer the solution, which is the agenda they want.
Okay.
That is the method of mass manipulation that is most used. But we have, we've talked in this discussion about how blatant it's becoming.
Mm-hmm.
We now have the likely Democratic candidate, John Kerry, who is an initiate of the infamous Skull and Bones secret society
sure.
at Yale University.
Right.
We have George Bush, who's going against him, who is an initiate of the infamous Skull and Bones secret society at Yale University.
That's right.
So now what researchers like me and David and many others have talked about for years and years and years, which is the influence of the Skull and Bones secret society in America, we now have two presidential hopefuls going into a presidential election who could well be, if Kerry gets it, it seems likely, both members of the same secret society.
That's right.
What has remained hidden and what has operated in a hidden way, like members of the same secret society coming up in various areas of society, open society, and
mm-hmm.
appearing to be against each other in open society while being members of the secret society operating for the same agenda,
right.
Is now, what has been hidden all this time, is now actually in our face, even in a presidential election. So it really doesn't matter on that level which of them wins, because the same masters will be in control as they always are.
That's right.
With the president.
Yeah, remember, and we had talked about this before too, Alec, that you know, these guys control, you know, both sides of the game. And
exactly.
One of the examples I give in my book is during World War II, leading up to World War II. Warburg brothers, one of them headed the Federal Reserve, the other brother headed the Deutsche Bank in Germany.
That's right.
Two brothers financed
uh-huh.
the war, financed World War II, and that's essentially what it boils down to. These guys are always on the winning side because they are both sides.
Virtually everyone at the Versailles Peace Conference, the major people that orchestrated the Versailles Peace Conference, which of course created the reparations on Germany, which led to the rise of Hitler, because the Weimar Republic could not possibly survive the reparations after the First World War, therefore opening the way for Hitler to come to power. Virtually everyone at Versailles was either of the Rothschild bloodline or was employed by the Rothschilds. The Rothschild, House of Rothschild banking family have been fundamental to this for a very, very long time. And I was interested to see that Russian tycoon, who was probably one of the richest men in Russia, so he was sick, who was arrested on corruption charges and what have you a few months ago, his shares went to the Rothschild family. And a lot of these people who are the big tycoons, like people like J.P. Morgan in America, who appear to be in control of their empires, are not in control at all. They're just front men for people behind the scenes. And of course, if you want to stop people rebelling against their country being taken over by outside sources, then you have to give, for instance, the Russian people at least the illusion that Russian oil is controlled by Russians.
They
might not like the Russians and what they do, they're in control, but at least Russians are in control.
Right.
When really, the Russians are just front men for the force that's really in control of Russia's oil.
Right.
And the same is can be applied all around the world to companies that appear to be controlled by people in that country, but are actually controlled by people and forces outside that country.
Yeah. And gentlemen, we're almost out of time.
Controlled the many for so long.
Yeah, we're almost out of time. We have less than a minute, and I want to thank both of you for being here. We have to do it again because there's about 50 subjects, David, that I want to cover with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Talk about any of the subjects long enough, and they'll connect to all the others.
Good. Thanks so much. God bless both of you, and I look forward to doing it again. And
Okay, thanks, Alex. And, nice talk with you, David.
And thank you. Thanks, Alex. Okay. And David, good night to you, too.
Yeah.
Or actually, good morning to you. Good night
good
to
morning.
Me.
I'm off to bed.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, guys. Everybody, that was David Icke. David Booth, I will see you tomorrow. We have a fantastic, interesting guest, Will Hart. You wait until, because I don't even have time to see you. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm Alex Merklinger. This is Mysteries of the Mind on the Millennium Radio Network. Good night, everybody. God bless us all.